Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance whenever we're able. We do routines to call the scenes to put quite in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are for the table. So many times we give and rhymes that are quite unsingable. We're off so mad in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Sam, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds, distributing swords, is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Do you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, the... So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. and the old I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing. Paul Harvey.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, watch that sound. Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Into your life it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop.
That ant that stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh.
One ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Hmm, puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table at www.shazoozradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html, where you have access to not one but four separate chat rooms. As well as if you scroll down on the screen on the Super Chat, you'll find a link over there to People for People Radio Network, where you can go visit those wonderful people as well. So anyway, today I want to start off until some of the other knights show up out here. I want to talk about psychopaths in charge. Hug a psychopath today. Go out there and find your local psychopath and give them a big old hug. Anyway, question, would you Gorilla Glue Granny's dentures to the toilet seat? Or maybe even kick Grandpa's walker out from under him? Snatch candy from a baby? Or maybe even shove your brother down the stairs and snatch his wallet while giving him a wedgie? Well, if so, you might very well be a psychopath. And so, read the definition. Psychopathy is traditionally a personality disorder characterized by persistent antisocial behavior, impaired empathy and remorse, and bold disinhibited egotistical traits. So, you know, I got a podcast that I'm going to play here. It has something to do with billionaires, and let's see what we can ascertain from them. I actually got two of these right here. But if you're one of those ruthless characters that has no kind of sense of morals or feelings of guilt, you might very well be able to become a billionaire if you like. Let's move right along with this thing here.
Do the rich people cringe and say, don't tell them that, Rob?
Yes, yes, yes. Don't tell people what you know. Keep them poor. My father was the head of education. PhD, all that stuff. I go home and ask him, said, why don't we learn about money in school? And he looked at me and said, because the government doesn't let us teach that subject. The government tells us what we can teach and what we can't teach. And I thought that was strange. And I said, but aren't we going to school to learn about money? He says, no. Your job is to get a job. I said, but you get a job to earn money. He goes, no. You're supposed to just get a job. I went, no, 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 no. Isn't the purpose of a job to earn money? He goes, you're correct. I said, so why don't I just learn about money? I can skip the job part, you know. And he got flustered and he said, well, learn about money, why don't you ask your best friend's father about money? And I said, why? That's Mike. So why ask him? He says, because Mike's father is an entrepreneur. And I said, what are you? He says, I'm an employee. I'm a government employee. I went, oh, what's the difference? He says, the difference is an entrepreneur must know about money, or they're no longer entrepreneurs. And he says, an employee doesn't have to know anything about money, because the government will take care of them, the company will take care of them. So I'm kidding, I'm all confused. But I took my dad's advice, and I trundled over to Mike's father's office and knocked on his door, and I said, hey, I'm here, 9 years old. teach me about money. He says, beat it, kid, you know. But that's when the story of Rich Dad, Poor Dad started. And finally, through persistence, my Rich Dad started teaching me about money on one condition. And that condition was he would never pay me. He says, the moment I pay you, you think like an employee. He says, that's the trap. Entrepreneurs work for free. And now I'm 9 years old, my head's going cracking in half. He says, you never want a paycheck. You understand that, kid? I said, okay, I got it. And he says, well, how do I make money? He says, that's what entrepreneurs figure out. It's like, so how do I learn about money? So he would just break out a Monopoly game board. So I would work for free and pick up cigarette butts and get hotels and restaurants, and I would clean and do menial tasks. And as I got older, I started getting into office work and marketing and accounting. And I was an apprentice, basically. But I always worked for free. And he would teach me about money. But the way he taught me about money was playing Monopoly. And I finally, one day, I got upset. I said, well, when are you going to teach me about money? He says, what do you think we're doing? We're playing Monopoly. He goes, no. What do you think we're doing? We're playing Monopoly. He says, what do you think we're doing? I don't know. I'm teaching you about money. And then that's when, you know, you have one greenhouse. You know, he says, there's many formulas for great success in money. There's thousands of them. But one of the best ones founded on the game of Monopoly. It still is today. Four greenhouses, one bed hotel. I said, what? He says, one of the greatest ways to acquire great wealth is playing Monopoly in real life. Four greenhouses, one bed hotel. Is that all there is? He goes, that's it. And he says, what do you think I'm doing? And I went, I don't know. So then he took me out and he showed me his greenhouses. And 10 years later, when I was 19, I was now in school in New York. And I come back to Hawaii. And Rich Dad had bought the biggest piece of land smack dab in the middle of Waikiki Beach. And when you go to Waikiki Beach today, you'll see the Hyatt Regency Hotel. That was his hotel.
Just like the game of Monopoly.
Just like the game of Monopoly.
Acquired assets and they became bigger assets.
He just kept it was called an assemblage because that property wasn't that big at that time. So he had to buy out all the small guys. Because Waikiki was a little dirt water, little town. So he'd buy out this shop owner, buy that shop owner. And it took him a while, but he finally assembled this large piece of property. And then he and Hyatt put up this giant hotel.
You know,
it just sold for $800 million. So that's how I learned about money. I've had financial crashes. I've had people stab me in the back. But they're all good because I grow from it. That's spirituality. You know, people who are afraid of making mistakes like they teach in school, they don't ever grow. Because spirituality is there's good and there's bad. There's right and there's wrong. There's up and there's down. Most people only want to be right. They only want to be positive. Well, you can't have that. That's not reality. Well, I wasn't poor by most people's standards. But I came from a family with a poor attitude, if you know what I mean. Because rich, poor, middle class, poverty starts with a fundamental attitude. Poverty is passed on. It's taught in your families. And middle class is taught in families. And so the people right now who are sitting at home, who are struggling financially or worried about money or unhappy, they may be making a lot of money, but unhappy with what they're doing, it was probably taught to you. You know, your superego was taught, get a job, work hard, or you'll never be rich, or the rich are evil, or whatever. The school system will never teach you about money. The school system is designed to teach you to be an employee, which is important, or a doctor or a lawyer, a specialist, but never about money. And what most people lack is real business knowledge, like accounting, you know, like debt, like taxes. You got to know that stuff, but they don't teach it in school to anybody. So, and then when people ask me, how did your rich dad learn this when your poor dad, a PhD, didn't? And the answer is very simply, my rich dad is my best friend's father. His father died when he was 13. So his rich dad had this family business at 13 to run. So he had to drop out of school, which was his blessing. You know, there's blessings, and you know, sometimes a blessing doesn't look like a blessing, but it turned out to be a blessing. And then his teachers became his bookkeeper, his accountant, his attorney, his banker, his real estate agents. So he has what I call real teachers, not these fake teachers in school. You see, most teachers in school, they're out of ethics. They teach subjects they themselves don't practice. I asked the teacher, I said, you know, I'm in my third year of calculus now. It was called Strength of Materials. I said, am I ever going to use this stuff? He goes, no. You know, I said, why do you teach it? Because I get paid. I said, do you ever use it? He goes, no. And that's why, you know, one of the things I suggest to people, you got to find a real teacher versus a fake teacher. And a fake teacher is somebody who doesn't do what they teach. And a real teacher is doing what they teach every day. So my accountants, my attorneys, they're in it every single day. That's how I learn, because every day I'm solving problems in my business. So I have accountants and attorneys and bankers and all these people on speed dial, because I'm solving problems with my team.
I see you giving this knowledge out, and
yeah.
Do the rich people cringe and say, don't tell them that, Robert?
Yes, yes, yes. Don't tell people what you know. Right. Keep them poor. But, you know, unfortunately, the poor, as was in the Bible, I'm not real religious, the poor will always be amongst us, because it starts up here.
Right, it's that fear mentality.
It's in their words, you know, and the words become flesh. God, I'm not really religious. I flunked out of Sunday school also. But when they say, I can't afford it, or I can't do that, go down. They become what they say. My PhD dad, he says, what do you think I am, made of money? I can't afford that. And my rich dad would say, that's why he's poor. Poor people say, I can't afford it, I can't do that, I don't have time. Because this is an escape. It's an escape. You know what I mean? It's easy to say, I can't afford it.
And your rich dad used to say what instead of, I can't afford it?
How can I afford it? How can I do that? You know, what would it take, or why should I do that? He says that a question opens a mind, a statement closes the mind. So when you say, I can't afford it, your mind shuts down, and you become what you say. Rugby is a team sport, but so is soccer. The rules are different. And other people are golfers. They play by themselves. And so everybody's different. So my game financially is business, number one. Second is real estate. So what I say to young people is, you find your game.
One other definition before we move along is sociopath, a person with a personality disorder manifesting itself in extreme antisocial attitudes and behaviors, and lack of conscience.
Hey, 42 here. As far as eccentric billionaires go, Alabama-based George W. Barber is high up on the list. He owns the world's largest motorcycle collection and his own private racetrack. But when you've ticked those off your list, what else do you do with your endless money? Well, in the 90s, Barber used his wealth to have a handful of life-sized dinosaurs built and placed randomly around the 10,000-acre woodlands surrounding his home. The dinosaurs are also accompanied by a collection of medieval knight statues, because why the hell not? But he didn't stop there. Barber also commissioned a life-sized fiberglass replica of Stonehenge that he hilariously named Barmerhenge, and to top it all off, a 50-foot naked woman submerged in his private marina. So, despite the fact that if you become a billionaire, you'll have vastly more money than you'll know what to do with, and you'll have to resort to building giant dinosaurs and women, the desire to be one is great. Let's not lie to ourselves, most people would love to be a billionaire, even if we don't know why or how we would even spend our fortune. But The unlucky reality is that your chances of amassing $1 billion or pounds worth of assets within your lifetime are pitifully slim. The current population is 7.5 billion people, and there are 2,043 billionaires in the world today. Meaning the chance of you becoming a billionaire is just 0.00027%. So, should you just give up now? No, because you can, of course, increase your chances of becoming a billionaire. You see, billionaires aren't like you and I. Their behaviours and actions are very different and unusual, and sometimes verge on criminal. And statistics show that copying these behaviours won't guarantee that you'll become a billionaire, but it will vastly increase your chances. Firstly, they are very patient, far more patient than the average person. Billionaire investor Warren Buffett once said, "The stock market is a device for transferring money from the impatient to the patient." Most people want success overnight, and it's easy to feel like you've failed if you don't achieve it, and one's natural instinct is to beat yourself up over failure or just slow growth. But patience is the key to success. The world's wealthiest individuals are no strangers to failure, and having to wait sometimes decades for success to come along due to their hard efforts. Bill Gates, the richest person on the planet, as far as we know anyway, knows this all too well. You've heard of Microsoft, but have you heard of Trafo Data? No, that's because it was a huge flop. Trafo Data was Mr. Gates' first company. Its goal was to read the raw data from roadway traffic counters and create reports for traffic engineers. Gates thought that his genius idea would optimize traffic and end road congestion forever. But the technology didn't work, and it fell flat on its face. But Gates had patience and perseverance, and from the ashes of Trafo Data, Microsoft was born. Since then, Microsoft has created 3 billionaires and over 12,000 millionaires. James Dyson created an incredible 5,127 vacuum prototypes over 15 years before he finally took his first bagless vacuum to market. Thomas Edison famously said, "I have not failed. I've just found 10,000 ways that won't work." From Steve Jobs to Richard Branson, they all had to fail miserably before they found success. If they had been impatient, they may have thrown in the towel and achieved nothing. Billionaires are the world's best problem solvers too. Solving problems is how most of them made their fortunes. But the road to riches is often fraught with seemingly impossible obstacles. When Joseph Piscopo was starting up his software company, Pansophic, it was going fantastically well for a few years, with $230 million of annual revenue. Until one New Year's Eve in 1985, a disgruntled ex-employee walked through the company's data center with an industrial strength electromagnet, erasing every single hard drive in the building. This was a complete disaster. They had no external backups, and everyone thought the company would close its doors for good. But a defiant Piscopo set to work on rebuilding all the lost data. Within just 2 weeks, the data was restored, and the company was flourishing again. And then there's Rock Mackey, founder of a billion-dollar cancer treatment company called Tomotherapy. He encountered an entrepreneur's worst nightmare. Right at the launch of his company, the main investor pulled out on launch day, and Mackey had to fire all of his employees on the spot. Yet, despite the incredible odds against him, Mackey still managed to go public with Tomotherapy for a $1 billion valuation. There are also small, everyday behaviours that most billionaires share. They are all very early risers, for example. Apple CEO Tim Cook, General Motors CEO Dan Akerson, and Disney CEO Robert Iger have all reported that they wake up at 4:30 every morning. And, according to research, the vast majority of billionaires are awake by at least 5:30 a.m. Our brains are at our best in the morning, and without the distractions of other people and family obligations, it's amazing what one can accomplish in just one day. New York-based billionaire Irwin Simon wakes up at 5 a.m. and he says that he accomplishes more before 9 a.m. than most people do all day. He spends the early hours of the morning answering emails, calling and managing his operations in Europe and Asia. He prays, walks the dog, and exercises, all before his kids even wake up. Oh, and he even has time to sit down for breakfast in Manhattan before arriving at his office to start his actual workday. But surely, if all these billionaires are waking up so early, they must be going to bed ridiculously early too. No, quite the opposite. These individuals have the rare ability to function at maximum capacity on very little sleep. A study identified a small group of people, roughly 2% of the population, who can function and live very happily on very little sleep. Just a few hours each night, in fact. This isn't just willpower, either. Researchers actually found that these people carry a mutation of a gene called HDEC2. When they tweaked the same gene and put it into mice, they found that the mice began to sleep less, just like the human test subjects. This is therefore a biological gift for the lucky 2% that have been named the Sleepless Elite. And what's even more amazing is that these same people tend to be very highly successful. Many millionaires, billionaires, prime ministers and presidents have been found to possess the gift of not needing much sleep. Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin and Leonardo da Vinci are just a few people who are known to have this unusual gift. Although, there are some very successful people who didn't have this gift, yet they actually forced themselves to sleep less so that they could get more done. Margaret Thatcher trained herself to only sleep for 4 hours every single night. I can easier sympathise with Winston Churchill, though. He begrudged getting out of bed so much that he would spend the entire morning working from his bed and even received important visitors in his bedroom. But if we put these smaller attributes of billionaires aside, there's one major, glaring trait that you absolutely must have to become very, very wealthy. To control such a large portion of the world's wealth, you have to be a total psychopath. Or at the very least, a sociopath. And I'm not being sycophantic. Most billionaires are clinical psychopaths. Sam Wilkin is an economist and head of business research at Oxford Economics. He has long studied and also wrote a book about the world's wealthiest 1% and the common factors that they share. And in all of his time studying hundreds of wealthy tycoons, he discovered one common factor. They are willing to do absolutely anything to gain market monopoly and ruthlessly force their competitors into the ground. I'm not saying that all billionaires are serial killers, but like serial killers, most are unable to feel empathy. This helps them to make difficult decisions that may harm others, but will advance their own goals. Criminal psychologist Robert Hare famously discovered, through his research, that 1% of the general population are categorised as psychopaths. However, over 10% of financial traders, stockbrokers, and bankers are psychopaths. Being a psychopath doesn't mean you're going to massacre your own family with a chainsaw. Psychopathy is simply a condition that is quite easily diagnosed by having the following traits: superficially charming, highly manipulative and able to con others, a complete lack of empathy or remorse, and a willingness to take large risks. So, I basically just described Donald Trump, and probably any other billionaire you can think of. But perhaps there's a reason that billionaires are psychopaths. Because it is what is required to make it to the top. In this crazily competitive capitalist society, only those who are willing to take large risks and skirt around the edges of the law, perhaps even breaking them from time to time, are going to gain that competitive edge needed to obliterate the competition and monopolise a market. Think Facebook, YouTube, Google, Amazon. They are so wildly successful and able to grow with astonishing velocity because they have no effective competitors. And that's the way they like it. It has long been rumoured that Bill Gates stole the idea of Windows from his Apple colleagues. Warren Buffett pays income tax on only 0.018% of his $74.2 billion worth of assets, whilst the rest of us are paying between 25 and 60% tax. And then there are the billionaires that made their wealth from poisoning the waters with nuclear waste, all the South American drug barons, those who got wealthy on blood diamonds, and of course, the billionaires who made their wealth building and selling arms, used to slaughter millions of innocent people. To do these things without feeling any remorse, one has to have a degree of psychopathy about them. This doesn't mean that all billionaires are bad people, quite the opposite. But there is undeniably a certain megalomaniac quality and a specific set of attributes required to amass vast sums of wealth. But, of course, the best way to increase your chances of becoming a billionaire is not by studying and copying other billionaires' behaviours, but by getting out there and putting your every fibre into whatever you're passionate about. Because success comes to those who are too busy to be looking for it. Thanks for watching. If you enjoyed this video, then please click here to support me on Patreon. Not only will you help me to make better videos, but you'll also get some cool rewards like t-shirts and posters every month, and early access to all my videos. Click here to watch another video, and if you haven't already, don't forget to subscribe.
Hi, lady.
Hey.
Can you hear me well?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, well, you kind of sound like you're way down the end of a sewer pipe or something.
Really? Do I still sound that way?
Can you turn your volume up, Aaron? Come closer to your mic?
I just turned it up. Is it still happening?
Alright, let me see if I can work it out on my side.
Okay.
Do 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 do. Try that.
Hold on. Is that better?
Yeah, you're louder now.
Okay, I think it's because I was listening to the stream.
Alright, cool.
we're in trouble then.
Yeah, we're always in trouble. But, hey, that's what happens, you know.
We're in trouble because of the psychopath circumstance that we're living under.
Oh, I'm telling you. Would you be willing to Gorilla Glue Granny's dentures to the toilet seat and run off with her purse?
No, why is that one of the traits?
Well, it's like you got to be ruthless if you want to be, want to be a millionaire. You got to be willing to step over people, you know, maybe skirt the law a bit or break it once in a while, that kind of deal. Well, not necessarily a millionaire. More people I probably make it to a millionaire than a billionaire. See, billionaire, you really got to be rotten. You got to be willing to be ruthless.
Well, so I mean, it's like, okay, so people are born this way. Is that the premise?
Well, I'm not exactly sure. If you go look into the different. Definitions of psychopath or sociopath, you know. Sometimes people are saying that there's something wrong with the gene or something, and when they were born, they don't have any kind of remorse or morals. I was listening to one video where the guy was talking about how he was trying to plan the murder of his brother, and even actually explained on how he ended up doing it. But, so... I'm just happy to know I'm not a psychopath because I'm not willing to. I'm not willing to hurt people in order to get somewhere in life, you know.
Well, nor myself, but I'm thinking, well, now I'm never going to be rich because I'm not a psychopath. Is that like the standard way to become wealthy? One of the wealthy elite is to have that psychopathic trait. It seems to be, and that's. You know, I mean, we have said, well, these people, the elite, the rich, are, ruthless, and they'll step on your face, or they'll claw themselves to the top, or push babies and children and whomever, whatever, aside to get to the top without, you know, without conscience, you know, without guilt, without remorse. That's pretty intense. You have a group of these people, the way, you know, their lifestyles, like they say, the lifestyle of the rich and the famous, you know, the rich, famous, psychopathic, that group. I'll never be rich.
I'm sure there's probably a few millionaires and maybe even a billionaire. I don't know. I'm just speculating. Maybe one out of all of them that might not be like psychopathic in the bad way or anything, but still had to, you know, basically skirt things in order to become rich. You see what I'm trying to say here? Like, I'm at a loss here.
Yeah, well, I don't know. That's a stretch.
Well, yeah, I'm the forever optimist. I'm thinking there's got to be at least one good millionaire or billionaire out there, you know.
Well, I'm only saying that because I'm playing the devil's advocate, because I have seen I read something interesting. I don't know. I didn't read the full thing, but I just read there's a trend or a trait that could be deliberate, but not of their nature, because of these elite people are very involved in philanthropy, but yet they're manipulative with the money, you know, for these philanthropic, you know, groups, you know, help the children.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, behind the scenes, we'll kidnap a few, give us money, we'll help the children, or we'll help Haiti, but we won't give them all the money. We'll take most of it for ourselves, or I'm just saying.
Well, those kind of organizations really get on my nerves, because we've talked about this before. There's been children starving in this world for as long as I can remember, and nothing's ever got accomplished. You see what I'm saying?
I do, and that's we have the Red. I mean, there are the Red Cross. We have the Clinton's Foundation. We have various other foundations that we looked into, that we see there's a lot of crooked things going on. So, but it's almost like they deliberately present themselves as philanthropic and caring, but they're not.
Yeah, that's the point I was trying to get to. There's a lot of people, seemed like, out there who made it to the top, that basically used everyone else's pain and suffering and played all the good people's hearts to that extent where they could actually gain wealth. So these Save the Children foundations, you know, they might have like a billionaire at the top that hires a few you know, people to go and call people up on the phone and say, you know, you can feed the children by donating this amount of money or whatever, you know, and that's that person's or those people's job, just to try to bring in revenue. But in reality, the person at the top couldn't care less about those kids down there, you know, might give a small percentage to keep itself out of jail, but won't give the full amount. I mean, if you actually look at when you donate a dollar to some of these things, only a small percentage of that dollar ever even makes it to the person that you're trying to send it to. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do, but I'm wondering, so you have a whole list of people that we are learning about who have been in the elite or in the elite arena, like you could say Hollywood, various other places, political arenas, Hollywood, governmental positions, or even doctors or whatever, you have suddenly these people are being exposed. My question, it just came to me, so are pedophiles, because look at Jimmy Siles, right, in the UK, various others, priests and various other people who are pedophiles, are they psychopaths? How would that? How does that happen? You know, because it seems to me that they are, right?
Yeah, it's anybody who's willing to step over somebody else for personal gain, as far as I'm concerned, falls in that category. You know, and even if personal gain ain't nothing more than like a physical sensation or whatever, you know, or basically being manipulative to, you know, make themselves the center of attention, that kind of stuff. Definition for psychopathy, again, is traditionally a personality disorder characterized by persistent antisocial behavior, impaired empathy and remorse, and a bold, disinhibited, and egotistical traits. So, there's probably a few people fit underneath that.
Yeah, so, but here's an interesting thing. There's this, okay, so let's say that many of us, the majority of us that we know, we could say, well, we all seek some kind of admiration, right? You know, we want to have admiration, people admire us and so on, right? Or appreciate us, admire us, and so on.
Yeah.
But there's an internal moral control that we have.
There's certain lines you wouldn't cross.
Yeah, they influence us, or they're supposed to influence us. The moral control is absent in those psychopaths, but it's sort of these moral controls are present with us, and they influence us in how we go about getting that admiration or attention, right? I mean, but I'm looking at this link here, and I'll post it up to you, but it's like, this is a questionnaire which most non-psychotic, non-narcissistic, and non-Machiavellian people would answer no to. Let's read the questions and see what you think. So, one, I tend to manipulate others to get my way. Would you say you do that?
No.
No. Okay, so number two, you tend to lack remorse. Would you say yes or no?
No. I feel guilty. I feel guilty for things I done when I was a child.
I feel guilty for things I never did.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a bad thing. I'm just, so, number three, I tend to want others to admire me.
Well, to some extent, I agree with you. I would be intellectually dishonest if I just said I didn't want people to look, kindly on me or something like that. I don't want to look like a jerk or anything like that. But I wouldn't say to the extent where I got to be the center of attention, because I want everybody to be the center of attention.
Yeah, well, there's that little bit of moral meter popping up. So number four is I tend to be unconcerned with morality of my actions.
Yeah, that's a definite no there.
That is a definite no.
Because I'm always criticizing, or at least, scanning my mind to see, is this right or is this wrong? If I do this, what's the potential outcome of it?
I think it's just an automatic. It's just like it's almost like that truth meter I talk about. We have a morality meter.
Yeah.
Right? So number five is I have used deceit or lied to get my way.
No.
And number six, I tend to be callous or insensitive.
No, that's definite not.
I agree. Number seven is I have used flattery to get my way.
Yeah. I don't know that I could actually say completely no, because when you uplift somebody's spirit, you can...
Yeah, but that's different. You're talking about flattery. It's sort of like, oh, you're the God, you're the perfect one, you're the all.
No, I wouldn't do it like that.
Want people to, to get your way. I mean, that's manipulative to me. It's not, I don't feel that that's something you do.
No, I believe that, I want people to feel good about themselves. Because I believe in people. I really do. As crazy as that might sound in today's world, I still believe, because everybody's got a potential, whether they can be on the dark side or the light side. And I kind of like to bring them over to the light side, and the best place to be there is to, if you feel good about yourself, you're more apt to try to make other people feel the way you do.
Well, you want your fellow human people to come along with you, right?
Yeah.
Well, so, I think even when somebody flatters you, I'm going to use that word, but it's, to me, flattering someone isn't a real thing, and I don't know for sure, but what do you think So people who flatter others, what is their agenda? Flattery to me is a manipulative kind of thing. It's like, I appreciate you, and when I appreciate you and tell you how awesome you are, you tend to go in the other direction. You go, well, I don't know, I'm just doing my thing, or I'm just trying to help people. So it's almost like you push away or avoid the accolade, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because I try to stay humble, you know? I think that's the best side of the fence to be on.
Well, humbleness certainly isn't in the arena of a psychopath, for sure.
Well, I think I'm glad I'm not a psychopath, because I don't want to be doing people wrong in order to try to succeed in this world. Like I said a long time ago, I've said this on the show before, if I wanted to be rich, I could be rich. But if I wanted to be rich and decided to go that route, I know that I would have to do things that would go completely against my beliefs and my character.
It seems that way, and that's a kind of a sad thing, because I think we all deserve abundance in all things. I'm not going to say the word rich, because, you know, the rich and the powerful kind of seem to go along together, those words, rich and powerful, right?
Well, I think there's ways to get to wealth without doing the dirty deeds. That's my deal. And if that'd be a longer and a harder road, because you're not stepping on people to get there. But as crazy as it sounds, I was born under the astrological sign of Libra, according to astrology or whatever. You know those.
Right, yeah.
And that's the scales of justice. And for some crazy reason, that's me in a nutshell. Everything seems to have this balance, you know. I want things to be fair. And so if I'm going to get rich and I have to ask somebody or do something to get them to help me get rich, I'm going to make sure that I share in that wealth with them. You're going to get 50-50. If you and I go and get rich, I'm giving you half of it.
And that's the scales of justice.
Yeah.
Or the reciprocity or the balance of things or the moral compass that you have, right?
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if your Libra sign, if in fact these signs really are factual, what are the signs? This is something to look at. What are the signs? Is there a trend in psychopaths, for instance, or these manipulative people?
That's a good question. I'd really kind of like to know that. Like look up some of the billionaires and see what their birth date is and what astrological sign they fall under. That would be a really interesting research there.
It would. So I'm just going to see if we can get something that. What are the A-S-T-R-O-L-O-G astrological signs of, what would we call it?
Billionaires.
Billionaires. How do you spell billionaires? Okay. Let me see if I get something on that. That's an interesting... Because you're talking about your sign. Okay. The sign... Okay. Here's one. Zodiac signs with the most billionaires. And the zodiac sign produce... This zodiac sign produces most billionaires. Is it... Let's see what it says. I'm curious now. Right? Oh, there's a lot of things on this. Other people had the same idea.
Yeah.
Zodiac billionaires. Who's who? The richest people in their billionaires. A sign of Virgo. When those... Okay, which is the zodiac sign of the most billion? Let's see which one I want to choose. There's so many here. Oh, my goodness. Let's see what we have. The zodiac signs of most... This is CEO World Magazine.
Yeah.
Let's see what they say. Let me see. Things are popping up in my way. Okay, let's see. A new study. Whether you're a passionate Scorpio, a loyal Leo, or an emphatic Pisces, each zodiac sign has different personality traits. But did you know one zodiac sign in particular is the most likely to produce billionaires? A new study has figured out the most common sign, star sign, among the world's wealthiest billionaires. They analyzed the birth date of each of the top 250 billionaires who featured on Forbes magazine and latest billionaire list and found that Libra...
Really?
...is the most common sign.
Oh, wow. My God. You know, this is crazy. And this is going to really... This is really going to sound crazy. I had this feeling in my gut. I've had this feeling all my life that I was not meant to be poor.
Wow.
And that's seriously, all my life I had this feeling that I wasn't meant to be poor, but that really shocks me because I don't carry the same traits as all these people out here that are willing to do, you know, things as far as skirting the law or even breaking it or whatever or even hurting anybody to make it that far. So maybe, I don't know,
Let me read more here. So that's okay. So there's a lot here, though, because it's Libra. If you believe in horoscopes and you're a Libra, then you're more likely to become a billionaire. With notable billionaires including Ralph Lauren, Stefan Pearson, Lillian Betancourt, Alice Walton. I don't even know these people. I know Ralph Lauren, but Libra is the star sign of 27 famous wealthy faces. Following closely behind, is Pisces with 22 billionaires, including Bernard Arnault, Rupert Murdoch, and Michael Dell. Cancer, Taurus, Leo, and the signs of 20 billionaires are the signs of ranking them joint third. Famous faces include, they got a whole bunch. Richard Branson is a Cancer. Elon Musk is a Cancer. Mark Zuckerberg, that ET, he's a Taurus. David Koch is a Taurus. Larry Ellison is Leo, and Sergey Brin is a Leo. Gemini and Aries are the signs of 15 billionaires each, including Jim Walton, who's Gemini, Steve Ballmer, Aries, and so on. So Aquarius and Virgo are the next richest signs, with 12 and 11 billionaires respectively.
So the top of the list, though, and working its way down, is from Libra all the way down?
That's correct.
Wow. Well, that's right. If I become a billionaire, anybody out there, you guys start building your shopping list, because I'll help you out.
So what they're saying is you have Libra, Pisces, Cancer, Taurus, Leo, Scorpio, Gemini, Aries and Aquarius and Virgo and Sagittarius and Capricorn are all on a list of billionaires, but the Libra is the top one.
Wow, that just blows my doors off. Well, maybe even in the spectrum of Libra, there's balance imbalance there. If that makes any sense, like, you know, there's psychopathic Libras and there's I don't know what the opposite of a psychopath would be. Do you?
A homeopath?
let me Google it up. Opposite of psychopath.
Is there such a thing?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. It's very curious to me because when you said about yourself as that Libra and your personality traits and your morals, it came to, let me find out what this means about your sign, the star signs, because, you know, a lot of people rely on the star signs and say they're pretty correct and direct. Yeah, and that's interesting, right?
Yep.
So you're saying, what is the opposite? Opposite of Libra? No. What is it?
The opposite of psychopath?
Yeah.
I found one little definition. It says the opposite side of psychopathy should therefore be defined
empath.
As... Huh?
An empath. Empathy.
Huh.
What is the opposite of a psychopath? Is an empath.
Well, that sounds like me.
Someone who feels empathy for everything and everyone on the planet.
That's me.
An empath feels the pain and suffering as well as the joy and love of every living being on the planet. Well, I feel that way too.
So, we're both in that same boat.
Well, when we're not rich.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a curse and a blessing at the same exact time. You know, because
in a way, yeah. But I'm rich in so many other things. You see, this is what is rich? What does that mean, richness? I mean, people think, oh, rich, it's all about money. It's all about prestige. It's all about, you know, what you own, what you have, your position. I have so much, you know, richness in my life. I can't even tell you how much richness. I don't have...
So we have the true wealth.
I think you're right.
Yeah, I can settle with that. I can run around with no money in my pocket as long as I feel what I do. I mean, I can feel people's love, you know. I don't know. It's like being in tune with nature. It's a good thing.
Well, let's look up that. What are the traits of an empath? An empath, right? I feel that, and I'm going to say it again, about how rich in my life I feel. And I'm going to say also, it's like a state of mind too, right? It's the way you look at your life. It's the way you react or look, or the way you're about things in your life, how you perceive things.
Yeah.
You know, you have a choice. Again, it's back to that free will and that choice. You could be, and I've seen this, I've heard of people saying they've gone to places where there are people who have very little, but they are the happiest people. Right?
Yeah.
They have abundance, you know. They have abundance in many, many things. Abundance in love, appreciation, gratitude, joy, you know, however it comes, you know.
Yep.
But it says empaths are often quiet achievers. Okay? That's interesting. I guess because you're not out there stepping on people's faces, you know.
Yeah.
You're not causing havoc and chaos, right?
Yeah, yes. Well, if it had anything to do with being vocal and kind of a loud mouth, I guess that would count me out. I sometimes get on my own nerves.
Yeah, I think that this is interesting because I'd much rather be this person that I am. And have the joys, the simple joys, the miracles that I've experienced and I so appreciate, rather than having a big fancy house, a lot of big cars, a mansion over here, a yacht over there, and just ignoring the people who have less and who are in trouble, you know, or who are really, really struggling. I'd so much rather be who I am.
Yeah, it feels so much better to go out there and try to do things for people. I know somebody one time said that there's no such thing as what's that word I'm looking for? You know, doing something without any kind of return. What's that word?
Oh yeah.
What the heck is that word?
Greedy.
No, there's a. When you do something just out of kindness of your heart without any want for any kind of a reward or anything, there's a word for that. I can't remember it.
Yeah, maybe Stephen will come up with it. Hi, yeah. Stephen. He's good at this. But let me just read this a little bit here because... So empaths are sensitive to TV, movies, news, and broadcasts. Like, for instance, violence or emotional dramas depicting shocking things of physical or emotional pain inflicted on adults, children, or animals can bring an empath easily to tears. Well, that's you. That's me.
Yeah.
For sure. And you, and actually, you may feel even physically ill. So that physically ill, choking back tears. So I call this sensitive gifts that we have. You know, like the clairvoyant, clairaudio. Well, clairsentient is the one where you identify. You can even physically feel others' pain.
Yeah.
You are emotionally tuned in. You can feel a person's sorrow. You can even feel what's going on in the world, in the earth. Like, you could look at pollution in the ocean or dying whales, and you could weep. You could cry.
Yeah.
Okay, Patty says philanthropy. Is that a philanthropist?
No, that's not the word I was looking for.
Describe it again.
Well, you know, whenever somebody does something just for absolutely no return, no reward, they just do it. But somebody said, somebody was telling me at one time that there's no such thing as, because when you do something kind for somebody, you in reality expect a reward such as maybe a good feeling or something like that. If that makes sense.
Well, Anjame says unconditional, like you're doing something and that's true in a way. Like there's no conditions.
Yeah.
You have no condition. You just reach out without expectation of receiving something back.
Yeah, that's
right.
That's. I'll figure
that's
it out.
It's close to it.
Yeah, that's close to it. It'll hit me when I ain't thinking about it.
So listen. So then, you as the empath, you may be an excellent storyteller, and you have an endless imagination. You have an inquisitive mind and ever expanding knowledge.
Well, that sounds like my life.
That sounds like you.
Huh. That's pretty wild.
Well, I'm glad to hear that this Libra, top on the top echelon of millionaires, is an empath.
Well, you know, you actually really need a good billionaire to balance out the rottenness of the bad billionaire. So nature would probably put that into play, you know? I honestly believe that.
You know, so you are a listener. You're bubbly, outgoing, enthusiastic, and you're a joy to be in the presence of, and I'll say that. Also, you're highly humorous at the most unusual moments, but there's a flip side. You can be weighted with mood swings that will have others around you want to jump overboard in a ship.
Yeah. In the process of talking about psychopaths in charge, if you read that that today's description of the show, I also put hug a psychopath today.
Yeah.
It's kind of sarcastic, you know. I mean, who's going to rush around and hug psychopaths? But I guess they need loving too, right?
Okay. Okay, here's where I go with that. Okay, because it's like the trending psychopaths in our midst, okay? They've always been present, right from down kings, queens, dukes, princes, princesses, and CEOs and whomevers, those clawing their way to the top to become the most highest elite millionaire, billionaire, trillionaires. I look at these people, you know, I see that there's something missing in their... now, this is just my perception.
No, I agree. I feel sorry for them, too.
I pray for these people.
Yeah.
I pray for them. But what I pray for, because what I pray for these people to have a shift, to become more empathetic,
yep.
You know, become more tender, or to wake up to other people's grief and sorrow, and to be more of... you know, a beneficiary to people, because I feel that there's this piece missing inside of them that they will never fill if they continue to be this, you know, this psychopathic.
That blows my doors off that you say that, because I'm watching, I like to watch these different shows, there's some science fiction, there's one out there, I can't remember the name of it, but it's basically about magic and stuff like that, and there's this evil witch in there. I'll have to look up the name of that. It's a really good series, but all the way through this lady's being rotten, and you're really frustrated with her because she's always being rotten. But at some point, she started to turn towards the good side, and she became lovable. If that makes any sense. And I feel like everybody deserves a chance at redemption. You know, I know there's some people that just going to continuously do whatever evils they possibly can, but to what you just said about turning them towards empathy, when these villains in these shows finally get the point of all the rotten stuff that they did, and they actually try to make things right, I start to feel something about that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm thinking of like the bullies, you know, like I kind of tend to feel that people who are bullies have a have a lot of internal grief and rage, and so you have to say, well, what happened to them? You know, there are reasons, I think. I don't think people are born bullies. To be a bully, I think they have their experiences, but are people born to be psychopaths? I mean, is that a trait that people are born with? You know?
No.
I pray for people who are doing evil, because you know why? Not so much for them, but for us. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I pray for these people to be awakened to stop doing this evil because of those they are harming, or possibly going to harm, so that stops. You know, it's not a selfish reason I'm praying for them. I'm praying for them because they're doing evil, doing harm, and I want that to stop. I pray that they be healed, I guess I'd say, so that this harm they're doing, this evil, this carelessness, this arrogance, this disconnect, unconcerned, uncaring, unloving, stops because of who's in their pathway, who could be possibly in their pathway, so that ends. I'm just saying. That's why I pray for people. I don't know if I'd hug them, if I'd downright hug them. I guess I believe in the... Oh, Patty wants to join. Come on in, sister.
Let me see if I can throw up in here. The movie that I was talking about has like Cinderella and it's Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs in there, and it's got the Wicked Witch from Wizard of Oz. It's a whole bunch of fantasy characters all in one deal. They get
yeah,
and it's really a good show. But the Wicked Witch lady, she turns out to be a nice lady before it's all said and done.
I see. Yeah, there's always. Well, those are good feeling movies, right? Is that real though? I don't know.
Well,
so it says
when you were talking about watching movies and stuff like that, and feeling, you know, bad for people in the movie, or you know, actually coming to tears and stuff like that. Even the villains in there that you just, you know, you want at one point in the movie you want to wring their neck. When they get to the point where you actually see that they're actually trying to turn over a new leaf, you start rooting for them, you know. And even when other people are criticizing them because they used to be bad or something like that, you're trying to
right.
give them the benefit of the doubt.
Exactly. So, cold-hearted psychopaths are born with distinct brains, and existing treatments may be useless. So, that's interesting. They're saying that they are born with specific, distinct brains. Well, that's an interesting thing.
Happy normals.
What would you call a movie that had characters like Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs and the Wicked Witch? Or I'm still trying to figure out the name of that movie series.
Well, that's Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Well, it's all of these characters from all of these different fantasy stories that you hear about. It's all piled into one series. They're all in there.
I never saw that.
You got the guy that, Rumpelstiltskin, he's in there. He's like
the Grimms?
Huh?
Oh, the Grimms fairy tales.
Well, no, they're fairy tale characters, but that's not the name of the movie. Let me try to Google this.
Oh, it's an actual movie.
Well, it's a series.
Oh, never heard of it.
It's really good. It's on Netflix.
Hey, sis, how you doing today?
Hey, I have something that I want to add to this conversation on psychopaths from the FBI. FBI statistics. These are the common zodiac signs of psychopaths and serial killers.
Oh, and serial killers, too.
Yes.
Ooh. Did you hear me read out the common signs?
Yes.
You have something even more intriguing.
Yeah. According to the FBI, some astrological signs are more likely to commit crimes than others. They realized a study ranking zodiac signs by the propensity for criminal action and dangerousness. These are the zodiac signs that are the most dangerous and most likely to become criminals and serial killers by their order. Number 12, Gemini, is the least, it's the least dangerous star sign.
Really?
The twins, yes.
I don't know, I lived with a Gemini for eight years, and boy, it was a crazy house.
Oh. It says, due to their variable, unstable attitudes, I expect them to be somewhere on the top of the list. You might also be surprised, but according to FBI shared statistics, it turns out that Geminis get blood on their hands least.
I found
okay.
it. I found it.
Okay.
It was Once Upon then a Time.
What?
Once Upon a Time.
Oh, the series.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if you want to watch a good series, go watch that. It's bad characters you love to hate, and I don't know. It's pretty wild because it's got all the different what did we call them earlier, the fantasy. Doggone it! What the heck is wrong? Fairy tales. Yeah, it's got all the fairy tale characters in it. It's got Peter Pan and Rumpelstiltskin and the Wicked Witch of the West from Wizard of Oz and Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs and all those, but they're like real people. But it's even got pirate Doctor Who or what the heck it has. Boy, I'm babbling now. Captain Hook.
Okay.
But there's a lot of magic going on in here, and Rumpelstiltskin and Peter Pan are like the two most powerful people in the whole deal, and they're on the dark side. And so you just have to watch it. It's pretty amazing. But throughout the whole deal, when you're watching this, when the bad characters start turning towards the good side, it makes you feel good. But then every once in a while they go back to the dark side, so you just have to watch it. Once Upon a Time. Check that out. It's on Netflix.
Check it out.
Yeah.
So go ahead, sis. What else do you have?
Okay, let me... Oh, now my cat has decided that he's going to...
Screw up your
okay.
link.
Yeah, let me... He scrolled me all the way down the dang page.
Ah! You're trying to help you surf the web.
Dang it. Yeah, he says, wait, Mom, I'm at the bottom. Let's go look at me. Okay, coming back up here, we had... Okay. We had Gemini, which you don't have to worry too much about a Gemini. You know, it says, due to their variable, unstable attitudes, I expect them to be somewhere at the top of the list. You might be surprised, but according to FBI shared statistics, it turns out that Geminis get blood on their hands least. You can feel free to trust a Gemini.
So what?
The second most innocent sign is Aquarius.
When the moon is in the seventh house.
I like that song.
Yeah. Says these peaceful signs are often the victim of a crime. However, they do also have a dark side, but not as much as the others.
What's the FBI say about Libra?
She's
sorry.
You might be surprised, but Leo is the third least dangerous sign. Says known at with his ambitious, Leo is just another surprising result when it comes to criminal cases. In the statements given by the Lion murderers, they stated that they have committed the murders just to attract attention. Okay, that's a little sociopathic to me. It is weird to see peaceful, fair Libras in the fourth place danger level. They say Libras, they just like justice, balance, and rules, but never touch their weaknesses. They might become the leader of an evil organization.
Uh-oh. Well, can we trust these FBI? I don't know. I don't trust the FBI.
The Virgo's deep sense of humanity may not always be there. Okay, so Virgo is number 5 out of 12. 7 is Pisces. okay? Pisces is sixth least dangerous. Now, they're going from the least to the most. So right now, we're on Pisces. Said John Wayne Gacy, a.k.a. the Killer Clown, and Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker, Osama bin Laden, were the most dangerous Piscean serial killers born in this sign. Then we have Capricorns, which I would have never thought that. Although we know them as masters of self-control, it seems they're not always able to control themselves from killing people.
Hey.
Which sign is that?
Capricorn.
Whoa.
And then we have Aries, danger level 8 out of 12. Mad Aries does not surprise us, being the fifth most dangerous sign. Their impatience, impulsiveness, and aggressiveness reflect on their crimes. Adolf Hitler is the best example of a dangerous Aries. If you think about pissing off an Aries, be ready to bear the consequences. Okay, and then guess what's next? 9 out of 12. That's pretty high on the list. And that would be Taurus, which is me. because of their sign characteristics, Taurus signs love, money, possession, and the material work. Perhaps that's where they are more common in committing fraud than murder.
That's so not you.
No, it's not me. I'm one of them throwback Taurians, you know.
You haven't even talked about Sagittarians yet. I'm a Sag.
You're getting there.
Where the heck?
You're 10 of 12.
I'm a really bad.
The third most dangerous sign. Sagittarians rarely hurt others, so they are most likely to become dangerous thieves instead of murderers.
Oh,
but arresting them may not be very easy. That's the bomb. Scorpio on the second most dangerous sign, danger level 11 of 12. Wow, you beat me out, sis.
Wow.
And then we got Scorpio. Probably their zodiac characteristics of bravery, the power of control, and manipulation are the reason of being in the second place. You were third, I guess. They engage more in murders and kill people in a sadistical manner. Just as Charles Manson. Okay, and then we've got, who's last? Cancer. Ooh, behind the emotional and sensitiveness characteristics of Cancer, we felt frustrated to see them on the top of the dangerousness level. It is said that they murder mostly because of their jealousness. Most of them are said to commit murder because of jealousy.
Yay.
And there you go.
The guy who runs Tesla.
I got a double whammy. I'm a Sag and Scorpio rising. Holy moly! Well, what happened to me? It's sort of like, okay, I'm listening to you saying this is the FBI. First of all, an FBI study on the zodiac.
You always seem like such a nice person, Barb.
Well, I'm a thief at heart.
She's out stealing hearts.
I'm stealing hearts. I'm just saying, I find it suspicious that the FBI is studying the zodiac signs of people to begin with, first of all.
Yeah.
And then you got to think about your environment. And then the moral meter that you have inside of you. They're not taking that stuff into consideration.
No.
Well, I got another one here. Says, could you pick one out of a crowd? It says, yes, sociopath. What a word.
Yeah.
We've all heard of sociopathic behavior, and we're all pretty much well-versed on the famous sociopaths of our time, in both fiction and reality. What about astrology? Can we spot the sociopath zodiac signs just based on their horoscope? Not quite.
Right.
So let's go down here. It says, Leo. See, these guys are totally different from the FBI, I think. Well equipped with the ego needed in order to be a full-blown sociopath. And then we go to Sagittarius. It's the fire signs, I'm telling you. The fire that ignites Sag is the fire that makes them crazy on a daily basis.
I'm sorry to be exposed here, folks, but now you know.
Dang.
And then we have Aries, which is arrogant. He's an arrogant sociopath in one fell swoop. And then, let's see, Taurus. Ah, there I am. Taurus is probably... Ooh, this one's good. Taurus is probably one of the most extreme zodiac signs in so many ways, and they really do excel at being successful sociopaths, too. Oh, boy.
I excel.
There's something I excel at. And then we got Scorpio. He's a natural predator. Finds a good home in sociopathic circles.
So you friends with those people.
And that's... here you are, Gaz. Funny thing about those Librian scales is that...
You mean Shaz.
Yeah, Shaz. For the most part, they're completely unbalanced. Libra has such a reputation.
Oh my gosh. Who did this study?
Wow. Yeah, I don't know. Libra has such a reputation for being kind, sweet, and even keeled that even the kindest, sweetest, and most even keeled Libra has to flinch at the thought of being that perfect. Dang. And in some sort of unconscious rebellion, they go all out sociopath.
That does identify you. I told you, you flinch, you go, no, I'm not so great. I'm just doing my job. So there is a difference here. Cold-hearted psychopath. I said, well, what's with their brain, right? Well, did you know this? This is interesting because there's a study done on the cold-hearted psychopaths about their brains. They did studies. They found out that there's a measure. They measured the volume of gray matter in violent male criminals by using magnetic resonance imagery, MRI scans. They found that cold-hearted psychopaths have less gray matter in parts of their brain. Because they don't understand other people's emotions. They have no connection to other people.
It's the gray stuff.
It's that gray stuff. What is that gray stuff?
Well, there's black and white, and then there's gray.
Okay.
I'm in the gray area.
You're in the gray... Well, you're such a good lady. Well, we have
not according to the FBI.
Well, I can't never see a time when I've ever witnessed Patty ever being extremely antisocial.
There's been times in my life.
Oh, yeah. There's been times in my life I've just slipped into the antisocial realm. Don't talk to me. Go ahead. Take your break. It's okay. Well, I find it kind of curious. If we're all being studied by the FBI or tracked by the FBI because of our zodiac sign, I think we're in trouble. I'm just going to say. What do you think?
I'm up the creek.
You're up the creek. Well, you got your paddle in your boat, though, right?
No, I forgot the dang thing.
No.
I just got this little tube, you know,
when
and my cooler dragging along with me.
What's in the cooler?
My axe.
Your axe is in the cooler? That's odd. But you were odd anyway, so I'm not surprised. Anjume says Libra is the sign of karma. And as we know, karma cuts both ways. And she can be a witch.
that's not what he said.
Nah. I know. Well, I'm just...
Not a witch.
Being nice.
I know.
But that's all about karma. I don't know. I think it's all about karma. That's what... If you believe in karma, I think we're all involved. If you believe in it.
Well,
in karma.
I believe that what you do to people eventually comes back around to you, so I guess that would be like karma. But you won't... You won't catch me gorilla gluing Granny's dentures to the toilet seat, because I'm sneaky.
How many of us have actually known a sociopath?
Probably all of us.
You think?
Yeah, I think in our there's like this 6 degrees of separation, so in some way we probably all came in contact with sociopaths, psychopaths, everything.
My daughter has a magnet for him.
Right.
What's I've had to run about? Off quite a few, which is what probably put me on that FBI list.
Yeah, that's it. That's when you became antisocial.
That's right.
What's, yeah, what is that karma about?
I don't know.
Well, you have...
I'm hoping she's breaking it now.
Well, so anyway, we got psychopaths in charge. The people that go to, you know, to Washington, D.C., they have to do a lot of dirty deeds in order to get there, it seems. You know, I really never seen somebody who was poor make it to the doggone Senate or the Congress, with exception, I guess, that Ocasio-Cortez girl that's up there creating a havoc right now. She somehow or another got into a Senate seat or a congressman seat or whatever. But that's a rare occasion. You know what I'm saying? I don't really ever see anybody from, you know, just the average Joe becoming, getting into one of those seats of power. And then...
Well, leave her alone. She just figured out what a garbage disposal was. Come on.
Well, how could you go through your entire life and not know unless you were already wealthy to begin with?
She was wealthy to begin with.
See? So that was a lie that they told, that she was poor and a bartender. What bar was she in? She was like one of those where they tip you $100 bill every time you give them something to drink.
She's a partier. She's just partying her way through college.
Yeah, well... I'm just not buying the whole... the doggone... If you go out there and you look at all these different people's stories, from the Senate to the Congress, and even judges, and, you know, high, upper echelon people out there, they got some stories to tell. They got a lot of dirty deeds behind the scenes there. And somehow or another, they get by with a lot of stuff and still get elected. How's that?
Well, if you go into politics and you have skeletons in your closet, they find out about your skeletons. And then, in order to get you to do what they want you to do, they protect your closet for you.
So what about
this? So that
this?
Nobody can look in there. So why would they not gravitate to politics to find somebody to hide their closet?
So what about this? Then if you are somebody of, like... slightly less than reputable, or you got a shady past, those are the folks that they want elected in there just because they would have the power over them, because they know these folks have dirt on them.
Yes.
So that makes sense.
Well, listen to this. So this, I just popped this in to the chats, both chats. This, basically, I said... are psychopaths in charge in the government, right? And guess, lo and behold, there happens to be a lot of information on this. Psychopaths in charge, maybe they're not human. Just saying.
Yeah, that's possible.
I kind of tend to agree.
It wouldn't surprise me in the least. But, you know, I'm not saying they're like lizard faces or anything like that. If they are, they got that 5G that'll make them look like real people, like that movie where the guy put on the sunglasses. That's where that picture came from. You know what I'm talking about?
Speaking of movies, oh, you mean The Matrix?
No, the one where the guy, he puts on these special sunglasses and he sees all these advertisements.
Live.
Yeah,
they live.
That's
well,
it.
I was just going to read about that. So 1988, director John Carpenter released a film entitled They Live. It follows a drifter referred to as Nada, who discovers that the so-called ruling classes were in fact malevolent entities masquerading as human. Now, isn't this curious? This was done in 1988, you know, remember the, like, that we called The Hidden Hand, that they tell us what's really happening in our world, and they make it like a sci-fi movie?
Yeah.
And so we have this little information popping up in our arena, in certain areas, that are stating that these people are, in fact, not humans, that they are ETs, the Nephilim, you know, that are embodied in these elite people, and they're running our country. So now this movie, They Live, is talking about the same thing. What do you say?
Well, this show that I watched the other day was about basically Earth was a cattle farm, and these people were draining people's I don't know what you call it, their energy, their life force, and so that they could sell this on their market, you know, throughout the universe to people who wanted to live forever.
That Jupiter Rising or something?
Yeah, that's it. That was a wild show, but it seems like, man, that's almost like what reality is. Maybe it's like you know, when you say something and man, I'm having a terrible time with words today. When you say something that basically mimics, oh, dang it!
Do you have any coffee this morning?
Yeah, like, I had some coffee, but I don't know. For some reason, my mind is just like thoroughly distracted because I got like 10 billion things running through my mind that have to do with this show right now of the parallels between, you know, the government that's going on out there, sci-fi movies, and all these different things. It's like what you said earlier, how they literally are telling you what's going on through the TV, and whenever you try to articulate it to people out there, it's almost like your brain has been indoctrinated to not listen. You know, they don't really teach. They don't really teach in school of how to get rich or how money works or how the system works. What they want you to do is to be trained to be an employee, to be a worker, and so they don't want you to excel, because if you excelled up to their level and that gives you the power that they got, then you might change the game. If that makes any sense. So they're deliberately keeping people poor.
Well, that's for sure. They really are. I'm looking at this. You said something that kind of brought to my attention about sucking your energy, right?
Yeah.
Sucking the life force out of you. Well, there are actually a lot of links on this, how people steal your power, your energy, and your soul. I just popped one into this link. And this is, I think this is a very factual, you know, piece here, factual realization that there are people that do this, and they could be psychopaths, for sure, you know, but I think that there are those deliberately doing this, like you're saying.
Energy vampires. Well, I can relate because, you know, I don't know, I'm kind of like a sponge. When I'm around people who are positive, I feel positive. But when I'm around people who are negative, they can literally drain me down into depression.
Well, we were talking about energies, frequencies, and because we're all beings of energy and frequency. And so if you're hanging out with people who have a low-based frequency, your frequency will align with theirs energetically. So you can, in other words, your frequency, if you're a person who's a caring person or a loving person or non-judgmental, and you happen to get involved with a group of people or person, even like a relationship or just friends or whatever, your frequency will drop into alignment with theirs. They're like sucking you into their frequency. Their energy field, which is you could say darker or lower or, you know, more harmful or disruptive.
And you know, it's really addictive. Either side of those frequency ranges, those deals is addictive, because when you're around a bunch of people who's negative, you literally become negative. And when you're around a bunch of people who's positive, I told a story one time about how one day I got so incredibly depressed because the things in my life were just going terribly wrong. And so I decided I'm going to go down and spend some time with my family, you know, so that, you know, I needed to be around people who love me and stuff like that. Well, so I make it down to my aunt's house, and all these people were there, and I'm sitting around the table. I come in and sit down. I'm all depressed, and they asked me if I wanted a cup of coffee, so I got up and got me a cup of coffee, and I came back and I sat down, and I'm drinking this coffee, and I'm listening to them. And it seemed like every single story at the table being told, everyone was trying to top the next one about how terrible things were. This person's dying, that person's dying, this person's sick, that person went to jail. And it just continued all the way around, and everybody had a more terrible story to say. And then finally my cousin and his wife come in, and they were cursing each other out up and down the storm top of their lungs. And I'm sitting there and I'm listening to all this, and finally I just couldn't take it anymore. I stood up and I said, "I'm getting the bleep up out of here." And they're all like, "Well, what's wrong with you?" And I said, "Well, I came down here because I was all depressed and I needed to be around my family. But after listening to all you people," I said, "my life ain't so bad. I'm going home."
Right. Well, that's an outright obvious energy sucking experience, okay, that you're talking about. You're describing that. It was very obvious and aware you experienced that as obvious. But there are ways that people suck our energy that, you know, we don't really know. I mean, it's almost like we don't expect that people will be doing this, right? It's not like you're going to expect that a person that you just meet is going to start sucking on your energy or causing you harm. You know, I've experienced that myself. Like, you're talking about walking into the room with your family and they're all hitting on each other and they're all, you know, screaming at each other and the energy drops and, you know. But I've experienced this with people, you know, so unbeknownst to others, because of my sensitivity, my psychic abilities, I met this person. Well, I met two people standing side by side. The first person I was standing in front of. So, you know, the eyes, they say the eyes and your body position when speaking to someone, like the eyes are important tool for transferring energy. They say the eyes are the window of the soul for a reason, you know. Like, you can give and take energy through your eyes. So a lot of people, it's interesting how people won't make eye contact. That's something to be aware of and alert to. But I was I was meeting these two people and, excuse me, standing in front of this one person. And I was looking at his face and big smile. And we said, "Hello and good to meet you," and so on. And I felt really kind of a nice, level of energy. You know, there was like nothing unusual, nothing alarming. It felt okay. I turned to direct my attention to this other person. I walked like a step and turned to meet face on this other person, like you kind of do, you know. I looked at this person in their eyes. They had a big smile on their face. But I felt this energy that was so dark. I saw it and I felt it. And turns out that this person was a very dark person, actually working with dark magic, you know, witch magic. And that alerted me and alarmed me, you know. But you wouldn't know it unless you had this ability to discern and detect these frequencies that people carry. It's very important that we learn how to pay attention to the sensory experience when we're meeting people. You know, or even when we're watching something, for instance, like we're inundated with all kinds of information, you know, news or political people or whomever speaking to us or telling us things. So mostly we just kind of blank out and we're not paying attention to the energies around what they're saying, because our words hold an energy. Everything about us has a frequency or an energy. So, for instance, when people lie, it's a different frequency. It's a different energy. So if you're alert, and we should be alert to this, you can sense something is not right with what they're saying. So you got to pay attention to that.
Yep.
Because we all do give off an energy. Words have a power. They have a frequency. They have an energy. So as we know, words of kindness and love and so on and compassion have a different feeling, a sensation, a frequency we experience as the others. But then there's this hidden, a person could be saying kind things or telling you what they're saying, this is the truth, what I'm saying. But behind that is a real frequency of what their thought is, what their intention is. That holds a frequency. So I think it's important that we learn how to discern the frequencies and energies of persons and experiences, and, you know, our involvement in what is going on around us, so that we can figure out what is true, what is not, what may be potentially harmful, that person or their behaviors, hidden behaviors, and what is a potential, you know, situation that we should remove ourselves from. So just saying. Hello?
Yeah, I was just trying to look up because there's some cultures out there that don't like to make eye contact, and I'm just trying to find out the...
Well, in the indigenous... So this is thinking on this, because a lot of indigenous people that I know of believe that you shouldn't make direct eye contact because of that, you know, because it makes you in a vulnerable position, because they knew that people can suck your energy, people can, you know, exude an energy or harmful frequency because of this. It's the same way with, they believed, don't get your photograph taken. The Indian people didn't want their photographs taken because they believed that their soul was being stole.
Yeah, so it has to do something with the military or whatever, that this one particular thing I'm looking at was that you're not supposed to misinterpret lack of eye contact as something different, because some cultures are like that they don't want to make direct eye contact. They're not, some of them's just they feel like they might offend you by staring you down or whatever, you know. There's a whole lot more to it. I'm trying to find the right deals to share with everybody.
Right.
Well, in the animal kingdom, staring another in the eye is a direct challenge. So, yeah, if you stare, like if you're a wolf and you come across another wolf and you stare him in the eye, that wolf takes it as a challenge, that you're challenging his superiority. The same thing with bears and stuff. When you look them in the eye and you make that connection, that eye contact, they're more likely to consider you as a, not as a threat, but as a challenge, you know.
Right.
To their, status.
Well, yeah, that's one of the things they say if you meet a wild animal or whatever is, do not look at them directly, you know. Don't, in other words, because they do take that as a challenge.
There's a little small definition that popped up. It says eye contact in different cultures. In some cultures, extended eye contact can be taken as an affront or a challenge of authority. Generally, only sporadic or brief eye contact is considered acceptable. This limited eye contact custom is particularly true in Asian cultures where people are from different professions or social levels. So, it's pretty much what you just said in the animal culture, also in the people culture as well.
But, you know, I have had situations to where, and I am like this, that if we're having a conversation and this conversation is dealing with personal issues or something, I will look you in the eye.
Yeah.
You know, I want to see if you can make that direct eye contact and hold it with me, because through that I can sense what is real and what is
stuff. Yeah, that's
right.
That makes sense. But I just wanted to throw that in there. But, you know, there's a lot of...
But when I'm in public venue, when I'm in a public venue around people that I'm not familiar with, I might look at them, but I do not hold that gaze. I will look away, out of respect. Yes. Just saying.
Yeah.
But there are times when I want to see, I want to know, you know, and especially if you come to me and you want to speak and you want to talk, I will, and when I'm looking at my grandchildren, I'm definitely saying, look at me.
Well,
you know?
I think something else that plays into that, while you're making eye contact with somebody, you want them making it and understand that your focus is on them and the conversation you're having, and you want to be truthful and everything like that, is also the way that you put your words out there. That's really important on how you're actually, you know, speaking, the tone of your voice and that kind of stuff. Because, you know, you can take a lot of different words. They'd be the same exact word can have a whole bunch of different meanings depending on how you say it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
And, but like Barb says, you know, it's always been, a given to me that the window, the eyes are the windows to the soul.
So I think that's probably why you see those psychopaths that are in the government. They never make eye contact with anybody while they're sitting there telling their, you can see them looking off in a different direction while they're telling them a bold-faced lie.
Yeah. Well, the thing about psychopaths is they don't have a conscience. They don't have a right or wrong gauge in there, so they're rarely worried. They're very much more and they think that oh, I've got this, you know, you can't see through me. They're very, very good at playing that game because they have no emotional investment in what they're doing, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's easier for them to put off that, oh, I'm innocent, you know, oh, I'm a sweet, nice guy, you know. I've had experiences with sociopaths, like I said, especially with my daughter who just woke up. But that when you come across them, they will be the nicest, sweetest. I mean, they speak in lovely little terms and they're complimentary and they want to make sure that you're comfortable and
yeah.
they act concerned about your life.
Yeah.
And then when you find them out, they run. They run very, very fast. When the trick doesn't work for them, when you put them up against the wall and you say, I know who you are, I see what you're doing, da 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 da. They immediately crumble.
Yeah.
At least in my experience, they cannot handle someone seeing through their guise, and they will fight it, you know. Oh, no, 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 no. But you'll see their whole demeanor change, their whole visage change. They want to hide. They want to get away. You know, they don't want any more of that interaction because it puts them in a place of fear, which they don't like, you know.
There are some people out there that's got some really powerful willpower, whatever you want to call it, because they can look you right dead in the eye and lie to you with the sweetest tone in the world and then turn around and stab you in the back 5 seconds later.
Yeah.
Well, what you were talking about, sis, reminds me of the study I did on the Jezebel spirit. Remember we talked about the Jezebel?
Mm-hmm.
Remind me about that. I know what you're talking about, but throw that out there.
Yeah, well, there's a specific entity or spirit relating to what they call the Jezebel. It was basically described in the Bible as a story about this woman, Queen Jezebel. She was the daughter of a pagan king. She married a king of Israel, King Ahab. She is mentioned again by name as a spirit in the New Testament, but there's certain characteristics that show that this spirit has basically intruded and entered upon a person and is controlling them. You know, she's a sweet, this person mostly is through the female, shows up in that, can show up in male, but mostly it's female. And there is like this sweet, sweet behavior, very gentle, very quiet, very sweet persona of this person. They present themselves as this very, you know, loving, caring, sweet, soft-talking, spoken person, but they have an agenda, and they basically infiltrate themselves into relationships where there's a happy couple or a strong, you know, relationship between people. That's only one thing that they do to basically break up that that relationship and get involved with the male. They do things behind people's backs so nobody knows that they are involved, that they are doing harm. And what they do is they point fingers at another person basically the person that they are set out to do harm to, that they are to blame. They play the victim.
Wow.
It's very, very fascinating. It's, it targets people of, well, in here, in this link, it says they target people of God, or those who are, you know, along those lines, you know, basically.
Man, we're truly on a battlefield. This is insane. I didn't think this conversation would get this in depth, but it's pretty enlightening because, you know, with all these people that are in positions of power or financial deals and things that they had to do, they probably had all those characteristics. They must have had all those characteristics to go through as many people as they did in order to get where they're at. They didn't care who they stepped on. You know, they didn't care, whether you were innocent or not. They didn't have any conscience, didn't have any, remorse or anything. They just did whatever it took to get to the top, but at what cost, you know? There's certain times when you can get suckered in, you're a really nice person, and you get taken advantage of a lot if you're not careful because of spirits like that or entities or whatever you want to call them. Am I wrong?
No, that's true. Well, I think these are kind of esoteric, informative, sites or links that we're talking about. In esoteric meaning unusual, in that field of an unusual circumstance or information, esoteric, not your ordinary, like you don't necessarily find this information in certain places. It's not your ordinary, you won't find it on mainstream media, for instance. But I just popped that. There's a lot in this link, the consistent traits of the Jezebel spirit. Very interesting what it's talking about, how this functions. It's a genderless, like I said, it's either male or female or any of the various forms of transgender identity, including homosexuality. This is what this article is speaking about. And I've read about this before. There's characteristics. They refuse to admit their guilt or they're wrong. They're never wrong, all right? This is, they basically need to get everyone's favor. They don't accept any responsibility for what they've done, or they deny it, or they become the victim. And also takes credit for everything. Basically, it's like they're responsible for all things, you know. They use people to accomplish their agenda. They talk in confusing ways, you know, where you don't really understand what the heck they're talking about. So this is sort of manipulative. They're good in that they are the good person who volunteers for everything. They get involved for everything. They are liars to the max. Maybe this is the psychopathic. They ignore people. They never give credit to anyone or show any gratitude. They criticize everyone. One-upsmanship, like I'm better than you. They sequester information. They use information. They talk incessantly. They spiritualize everything. Put themselves in that position. They appear to be spiritual people. They're subordinate, pushy, domineering. They often have clairvoyant tendencies. They use the element of surprise. They sow seeds of discord. I think that's one of the key pieces. They are constantly sowing seeds of discord to affect people, to deeply affect people. They're vengeful. So they are there as a disruptor of harmony and balance, for sure. Just saying, because we were talking about we're in this spiritual war, and, this seems to be the trait, is to disrupt and to do harm and to pull people into a darker place, they're
sounds like my stepmother.
Yeah, I've met some people like that myself.
I know some people like that, too. And I've identified them as that entity. I've seen it very clearly. Some really dark, just saying.
So we got to figure out a way on how to get around the psychopath's game and not be taken advantage of. That's why I keep on saying I think that we, the people, the actual people of this world, need to pull our resources together. You know, our minds and whatever to get things done right in this world, because we're never going to get it through the system that is set up. This system that is set up is set up to literally make you fail from the start to finish. That includes the education system. They don't teach you.
Well, there's something about psychopaths that is, I think, in my experience, has been key, and that is they carry with them a lot of self-loathing and a lot of fear because of things that have happened within their lives. And if they come after you, they're projecting on you that fear and self-loathing that they have had, and they can't put in its place. If a psychopath begins to, if you catch a psychopath's attention, it is because that psychopath sees a weakness in you.
Ah.
They will not go after a strong person. They will go after a weak person, and they will pick out traits of these weaknesses. Your weakness towards feeling empathy is one of the main things they come after. If you are an empathetic person who can see the pain in other people, then they will focus and they will make you feel pain by pointing out any little inconsistencies you have within you.
Well, that makes me a target for psychopaths.
Right. It makes a lot of people a target for
psychopaths. Exactly. But I think that's a general terms that like attracts like, that we have to be aware of that, like you're saying. And like who you are drawn to, or who will be drawn to you, can become,
yes,
you know, right? That's a pattern that energetically, frequency-wise, like attracts like. Just saying.
That's exactly right.
So,
and at the moment that you turn your back on that, the worst thing that a psychopath can have,
yeah,
is to be trying to control you, and you turn your back on them. And you walk away, or you start pointing your finger at them and you hit the spots,
yep,
that are so painful within them, and you will see, you can see them actually physically, emotionally, and mentally begin warring within themselves. They get confused within themselves. They get afraid. And you will see their mannerisms actually change. This I've seen from experience.
So would you think that would be the point at which they become dangerous?
Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've experienced what you're talking about, but what happens to them is, okay, so they experience that initially, but then they become the attacker on a worse level. Then they can really become... I've seen people shapeshift into an entity... an actual entity upon their face, that entity that we spoke about, says, I've seen that. When you stand strong, when you have identified this person as that, and they see that you have, they become violent. They become, you know, their level goes up to extremes. And I've seen them shapeshift into that entity. It's very, like a blink of an eye. Very quick, but I have seen that. And I've been, you know, attacked by that.
Yeah, and the thing that I've done is I haven't backed down. I've just stood my ground.
Yeah.
And I've put it right back on them. And, I, you know, there's times when I've stood and I've said, bring it on. Come on. I'm ready for you. Come on. They don't like that. They don't like that. And if they feel that you're going to be more trouble than you're worth to them, if they're not going to be able to get into your head, if they're not going to be able to manipulate you, if they're not going to be able to push those buttons, they're going to look for somebody else. And If you can't get away from this person, however, if you're in a relationship with this person, then it becomes dangerous.
Yeah.
If you're in a situation to where this is a colleague, a co-worker, or something like this, then it becomes dangerous because they will back off, but they're not done planning.
They're not done.
Right.
So that explains
and they will come back at you.
That explains why our governments of this world are in such a disrepair, is because they're psychopaths fighting against psychopaths while trying to control all the original people. What do you think?
Yep. You know, I envision the elite all the time, and I see them in their mansions, and I see them running around on all fours, drooling and swinging from the chandeliers and just acting out insane. Because this is the way I picture them in my mind. I don't think I'm that far from it. When you go behind them closed doors, I bet you it's a circus. You know?
If you have
more than one psychopath in a house, imagine how that would be.
Oh, man, that would be a nightmare.
Well, just look at the queen and her family. I'm just saying.
Yeah, everybody's running around manipulating everybody. That makes for probably the most exciting soap opera in the history of time. I can't watch soap operas because when I sit down there and watch how people are lying and manipulating each other and, you know, all these different dramas that's going on, I'm not one to like to jump in the center of a drama. You know, I might be in there to try to bring peace, you know, or something like that, but after a certain point, you got to get out of that mess. You can't live your life in a system or even a situation where everyone in that place is all dramatic. Everything's terrible. It would just drain every bit of your spirit out there just having to try to survive in a situation like that. I wouldn't want no part of it. That's like that story I told earlier about when I went to my family because I was depressed. I get down there, and they piled on the negativity so thick, so heavy, that I just blew my stack. I said, I got to get the heck up out of here. As I thought, you know, I came down here because I'm depressed. But after listening to all you, my life ain't so bad.
Look, in order to get myself together after growing up in an alcoholic dysfunctional family, in order to heal myself, to remove myself from that energy, shift myself into a better place, you know, do all that work, I had to step away from my family. For 4 years, I stayed away from that toxic energy.
Yeah.
Because it is toxic. Once you step back into the through the door, you're engulfed in the toxicity, you know. So you have to be able to get yourself in a better place where... And I call it like that still point, that place where you are in your center, connected to source, and chaos can be roiling around you and it's not going to affect you. And this is what we talk about when we say, what can we do? Okay, yeah, people are saying, the planet is definitely not for the weak, Tracy says, and it's like hippies, Gondarn hippies says it's full of loonies, a social experiment. And that's very true. So how do we deal with this? You know, my own process of being able to be in a place, in a safe place, I had to create my own safe place with my relationship to Creator, to Great Spirit, to build that personal power, to surround myself with that personal power of light and connectedness, that foundation, and so that I can be, because, the world is full of psychopaths, loonies, and manipulators, and who knows all what else. So in order to be here in this world and do what I do, I needed to shield myself. So we talk about getting your spiritual shields on, right? This is what we're all needing to do. Saying.
In my case, I just became loony myself, but at a different level. You know, I never had a problem laughing at the things I found absurd in people, which made people upset with me at times. But, you know, to me, I look at life and I see people for who they are, and I'm amazed. It's magical to me, you know. My daughter, she has the same thing, but she's a little too, she wants to engage wholeheartedly, you know, with these people. And I keep telling her, no, you just, it's like you're at the zoo, you know? There's a petition between you and them. And you can sit there and make faces, and you can, you know, have your fun, but you gotta leave. You can't
just... throw the peanuts and leave.
Yeah, throw the peanuts and leave, you know? And it's like my little song, you know? I will break out in my na-na-na-na-na song anytime I want. And it totally disarms people because they look at me like, well, that's a loony dang woman there.
Is that
turn around
mom,
and walk away.
Is that why my mom always said that you got to humor those folks?
Yeah, I humor myself and it drives them nuts. Yeah.
Well,
like,
you got to have humor.
There's nothing intelligent there. Walk off, walk off.
If you can't laugh at the absurdity of things, well, you'll be jumping off the cliff.
Yeah, that's what I always started saying, that... you got to make the best of a bad situation, otherwise life will get you down. Sometimes you got to laugh in the face of adversity, and that's true. I think one of the things that helps me through this whole mess is this show right here. It just amazes me. When we get together, I feel comfortable. I feel safe. And listening to people in the chat room and the things that they say in there, you know, this is probably the best version of a family that I've ever witnessed. You know, I'm not saying that my family's not good. I love my family on the outside of this, but this show that we put together to bring information together and the people that show up here, the energy that is in this is really, really powerful. And I feel safe. I feel comfortable sitting down here having a real conversation with you ladies and these folks that we talk to on a weekly basis out here. I think that the Knights of the Round Table is a good thing. And I'm really glad that I started down this path years ago, because I've got to visit with some really awesome people. Every once in a while we got somebody in there that just wanted to make a mess out of things. But we never let that break our stride. We came back, and we're still here. After all these years, we're still here. Don't you think that's pretty powerful? Don't you think that's cool?
Yeah, I do. Yes, I do. And I agree. This is a family. And I've always said it. You know, I used to have my own radio station and website. Used to have a lot of people, and it was a Suedo family, but here with you, Shaziz, and with the people at PFP, this is a place where you come and you sit down and you're comfortable. It doesn't matter what the topic is. It doesn't matter if you agree or not. This is still family, and that site is not lost. People can come here and they can talk about anything, any topic. They can agree and they can disagree, and it's okay. We come away from this with the same thing, that we're all just here, sharing our knowledge, sharing our experiences, sharing the love, the discontent, whatever it is, but we're all good with it, you know? Give me my cup of coffee, I'm sitting down, let's get to it,
yeah.
You know?
If you go on to, if you're already on or go on to the Super Chat room, scroll down, underneath there's a banner that says CVS News on there. There's a picture, it's a GIF animation of a campfire, and above it says, come sit around the campfire with all your brothers and sisters from around the world. Together we can figure out ways to make our world a better place. That sums it up, don't you think?
Yeah,
yep.
God darn hippie says, me likes coming here, amused, bemused, enlightened, and frightened. I like that.
Yeah, that's cool. And
must be a hippie out there.
The sense of humor out there is pretty cool, too. Some of the things that we read in the chat rooms, it just blows my doors off.
Well, I like it. I like to be here on your show because we go into all kinds of topics. Nothing, you know, I guess you'd say we touch on everything, because we're like explorers, you know, we're researchers, we're explorers, we're curious, we have that natural way of given to us, like the adventurers, the curiosities, the creative, you know, creativeness, the awesomeness of things. You know, we like look at all of these things. We're not afraid to talk or touch on anything, which I feel is important, you know. I mean, sometimes I grew up in a household where nobody talked about what was really happening. If you think you want to feel crazy, well, start there. You know,
yeah.
It's like you're living in a dysfunctional household, alcoholic household, and nobody's talking about it. Everything's okay. Oh, no, everything's fine. It's all normal. We're okay, but it's not okay, and nobody's talking about it. So that's why I'm talking about things that are not okay today,
yep.
And I'm not afraid to do that. We have to talk about things that are not okay, and then we talk about them, and we identify the things that are harmful and not okay, and then we talk about solutions. Because if you live in a household, you know, that is dysfunctional in many ways, alcoholism, abusive, whatever, if you don't talk about it, if you don't come together and find that the resource to heal this, to help this, you know, it's very damaging.
Yeah, it's perpetual, too.
A lot of people that live, and they live their lives not talking about the real things that are happening, you know, it gets worse as you go on.
I agree, and the psychopaths out there in charge, they're playing a game on us, and unless we know the rules of that game, unless we understand how that game's being played on us, we could never win against that game. But I think that what we've done by doing all this exploring of every different subject that we talk about and the way that we go about it, that we're learning that game that's being played on us. And you share that knowledge with other people and get them involved in being able to understand when this game is actually being played on them. And to these people, this is a game. I mean, they probably sit around taking bets with each other to see whether they could either start a war over here or, you know, how this is going to play out. If you look at the stock market, the stock market is like a big gambling casino for the people that are involved in it. But if you listen to that one guy that talked about, he's a billionaire, he said that the stock market is a way to change money from the impatient to the patient. So these folks, they are patient in order to get their agendas through. And they're willing to wait years to get things
years.
Done.
If you think about this, what has been going on, just think about talking about psychopaths, psychos, forget the path, psychos, who are doing this, who have set this system up. Well, this agenda and this system has been moving forward incrementally throughout generations, and they have been, you know, a lot of hidden information, but they disclose the information about what they're going to do to us, and they're laughing behind the scenes. The fact that they're putting everything out, showing us, yeah, this is what's coming, yeah, this is what we're doing, but it's a sci-fi movie, and let's see if anybody gets this.
Yep.
And, oh, guess what? They're not getting it. Well, that makes them feel really good because people are not getting it. And they're showing us, and they're planning, sitting down in these places and planning how to get it over on us, how to manipulate us, how to control us, how to mind control us, emotional, physical, everything, even spiritually control us. They're having a good time.
And it's a little more in-depth, too, because not only are they figuring out how to control us, how to manipulate us, how to get us from one place to another, at the same time, they're going back through their historical data and their old narratives, and they're saying, okay, when we do this, we're going to get pushback from these guys, and they're going to do this, so this is how we're going to combat that.
Yes.
They get smarter every time around, you know.
That's a psychopath type of thinking. You think about people actually having the capacity to do what they're doing, you know, against innocent people, you know, vulnerable, innocent people.
Yep.
That would explain why whenever we do what we're doing, when we hit certain key notes, we come under serious attack, and because we become dangerous to the system. You don't sit there and say, you know, things out there to tell people, you know, you have true power of the spoken word or energy, that if you combine this energy together, you can overcome all this. They don't want you saying that stuff.
Yeah, well, you think about that. So more and more recently, we see increasing censorship.
Yep.
That tells us that more and more people are waking up and speaking the truth. Therefore, you know, more and more censorship is happening right now. Well, that tells us something important.
That means we must
be... That dang internet.
Well, they created a nightmare, didn't they?
They opened Pandora's box is what they did. You know, they showed me free energy and I told it to the world. So, hey, I paid attention in science class, regardless of what type of education they got now. Back in the day when you and I and Patty were going to school, Barbara, they had, you know, real science books. We actually did real experiments. It wasn't like the modern day. It seems like they got farther and farther away from teaching people. They wanted them to be more like worker bees than people who are free thinkers. And because of our generation, we probably got in just at the end of when they realized that they were giving us too much information. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, now we've got Bill Nye, the science guy.
Yeah.
And we've got DeGrasse Tyson.
Yeah, Tyson DeGrasse, yeah.
Yeah.
Both of which are complete sellouts.
Well, these authorities that know everything.
They're movie
stars.
Looney Tunes. Yeah.
Well, you know? I know when I'm looking back at when I was in school in the 50s, the history, I can say that the history was outright lies. You know, it was very controlled, very manipulated, what they told us, what they taught us, you know. And that's gotten even worse because now you have the dumbing down of America through education, starting with the little children. The deliberate, and the Koch brothers were actually involved in changing that curriculum, you know.
They're actively changing history.
Yeah.
And
speak. I mean, rewriting history. They're not just, writing what's already there. They are completely obliterating what is there and rewriting the total of history.
Yeah.
And so you've got a generation that knows the old history, which was still the fake history, but they're working on a premise that of a historical eras and stuff that they identify with. But then you've got this new generation of history that's being taught that is totally different. So there's a big gulf right there between. You know, it used to be the elders passed on the historical significance of life to the next generation.
Yep.
There's a gulf between that now.
Well, they're
because
making it
of
harder,
the rewriting
too.
Of history. There's no meeting place. The ones that are coming up now are saying, you're totally wrong.
Right.
This is the history, you know.
What you
well,
said
this whole thing about taking down the statues because these people did bad things, that sounds like a good thing, doesn't it? Let's remove this statue because so-and-so. Let's remove Columbus's statue. Let's remove this general statue. Let's do all this, get rid of this because they were bad people. Well, that sounds like a good thing. But really what they're doing is they're erasing the truth of what really was going on.
Right, well, right. Now, there is one monument they're wanting to take down that I am happy with. I'm sorry, I'm bad. It's my bad. I'm bad. And that is Mount Rushmore. To me, they could take that son of a gun down.
I agree.
I would just be really happy.
I totally agree.
My.
Yep. No, I totally agree. I kind of am annoyed with the Crazy Horse Monument.
Oh yes. Oh yes. Me too. What the heck? Leave the freaking mountains alone. Come on.
Yeah. People think that's wonderful.
They don't. Yeah, they don't have a political standing, you know? They're older than that.
Exactly.
You know? It's insane. But, like you're talking about, the civil war that our country fought, whether you're on one side or not, it's history. It shows you the dichotomy. It shows you the struggles and the mindset of the people for change. And it shows you both sides. And if you actually look at both sides, you know, you come away with full understanding of what exactly took place, and you can make your own determination as to the right or the wrong of either or. When you only have one aspect to look at, then you have no self-awareness of actuality, of judgment, of self-judgment, of where you want to stand, of what the how we got here, so to speak. If there are no more monuments, if there is no more history about the Civil War of our country, then we're obviously setting ourselves up to repeat once again.
Yeah,
and
that's
what look at the political. If we look at the political system today, that's exactly what they're trying to do.
That's what I was about to say. What you just said about if you ignore history, you're doomed to repeat it. That's already been said, but. If you don't even know that these things ever happened in the past, and you can't learn from that mistake. There's a lot of mistakes that has been made this entire, you know, history that we've all been through. And I want the future generations to know both sides of the story just like you do, so that they can make a conscious decision not to repeat those same mistakes in the future, and to know what, you know, was actually behind it. The people that, you know, were big money men, you know, back in I think it's like the 1800s all the way through the early 1900s, there were literal wars here in the United States between companies and unions and stuff like that. People died. They literally killed people in order to maintain power.
The railroads.
Yeah. That's it.
I mean, there was slavery brought in to build railroads, and it wasn't just blacks. It was Chinese. It was Irishmen. It was just about every culture that they could grab a hold of, these immigrants coming across, and put them in slavery.
Yeah, took advantage of their financial status because they're here, you know, trying to build a better life, and because they didn't have what they needed, they could get them to work for pennies on the dollar and just totally mistreat these individuals, you know?
Yeah, and what they did was they gave them room and board and food, and then they said, well, now you owe us.
Yeah.
You don't get paid enough, so you're going to have to work for the next 10 years, and every day that you eat and sleep in our tents and eat our food, you'll owe us more money.
That's where that phrase, owe my soul to the country store or something, or the company
yes.
store? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's... that's bad.
Indentured servitude.
Yep.
You know?
Well, to some extent, we're still there, Patty. You know? Some
heck
extent,
yeah.
We're still there because if you look at just your utility bills alone, you have to get out there and work. You know, unless you got some sort of fortunate revenue coming in, you have to get out there and work. Otherwise, you don't get the luxury of electricity. You know, you can't have that. And that's why if you talk about free energy, you start to get under somebody's skin because they want that power over you. They got to have that power over you. You have to get out there and be a worker. Otherwise, you don't have no electricity. You can't have lights, and you can't have cool and heat when you need it, and so you're basically an indentured in servitude to the system. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. No, and it's the state of life today. You know, there's a big thing going on right now here in the U.S. about reparations towards slavery. And that's going to cure absolutely nothing. There is no way, there is no way that there can be reparations paid for like the slave trade that happened here, because the government, that government, it can't afford to open that can of worms.
Well,
because
just that,
because
it breed hate and discontent.
Well, because for one thing, if the U.S. were to open reparations for, say, the blacks, then the Indians would step up, then the Irish would step up, then the Chinese would step up, then countries across the globe would start seeing pushback. There's no way that this could ever, this would go on forever. This is a can of worms that has no end.
Yeah.
We were all, every single person on this earth has had to deal with some type of slavery in their ancestry. That's just the way it is.
Well, and even though they don't call it that, you're still in slavery. Even though they
right.
don't call it that, we got a title to our body. You know, we got a birth certificate. That's basically like a car title. All right, what's that all about? Why do we need a piece of paper to say we're alive, that we're who we are? But nonetheless, a birth certificate, a social security number, a driver's license, an ID card, all of these gives the system something to say you're alive, you're this person. I can't just walk up and say, hey, I'm such and such. No, you can't. You got to prove you're such and such. And your financial, your medical, your education, that's all attached to that same exact system. And
if you want to figure out what reparations might look like, you have to look at what they've done. Say, okay, let's look at what they've done with the Native Americans here in the U.S. You know, they said, okay, we took your land because we won and we conquered you. So, but because you were here first and you won't shut up, we're going to give you your own land. So we're going to put fence around your own land, and that's your little space, and you can be totally autonomous.
But you just
except,
put him in jail.
Except that we will put a government authority to work with your tribe, and we will take a piece of everything that you make, everything that you do, and we'll give you a government check. Okay, here's your reparations. You're going to get a monthly check to live in this little fenced-in area while we allow corporations to come in and take resources from your land. It's okay. It's all right. You'll be compensated, but it doesn't work that way because that little check is never enough. That little check is just a chain and a shackle to further enslave.
Yeah.
And that's what happens. It's like a class action lawsuit. You know, everybody says, oh, it's a class action lawsuit. Let's go into it. And when they get their little check, their check is like for $50 while the lawyer made a couple million.
Yeah.
Right?
And all those people that just got fenced in didn't realize they got thrown in jail. That's it. It was a
yeah.
jail.
Yeah.
And it's
disgusting. And then they send governments in there that take over the Indian governments. So there, you're still a slave.
Yeah.
You're still a slave. You know, and it happens all over the globe.
We're all enslaved. We're all still enslaved. Yes. No matter what yes. it looks like, you think you're not a slave. You think you're free. You think you're a free thinker. You think you're free to make your own choices. You think, you know, you believe this is free. We're in a free world. You know, but it's not so. If you really look clearly, you can see that we're very manipulated people. We don't make our own decisions. We're influenced to make decisions.
Yeah.
We're manipulated. We don't have critical thinking anymore. People don't critically think.
Our choices are the ones they give us.
That's right.
Long time
exactly.
ago, I saw a sticker on the back of somebody's car one time that said "slave from birth to grave," and it took me a long time to understand what that actually meant, but. everything we talked about right here. That's exactly what it is. The day you're born.
Just look at the fact that you need to have a paper, pay for a birth certificate, have a birth certificate to just be born. You need to have a certificate, pay for something, a license, whatever. What kind of freedom is that?
And if you want to participate in society, you got to follow their rules, which basically says that if you're driving down a road and you break their rules, they can imprison you. And we're not talking about breaking common law or, you know, basic human rights or laws like that. We're talking about, you know, you're driving a little too fast down a hill, you know, and you got pulled over and it cost you a lot of money. You didn't have the money to pay, so you end up having to go serve your time. But now that jails aren't jails like they used to be maybe back in the 1800s, jails are for-profit jails. And, you know, they make their money by how many beds that they can keep full. That's crazy.
Well, the state pays them for that occupancy.
Yeah.
You think
that... There's a contract.
Well, you're not free if you can, if you're not growing your own food, your own healthy food, and you have to go to what the food stores give you, is what they give you, you're not a free person.
No.
You know, if you can't use the medicines and the natural medicines from the earth... You know, or an alternative medicine for your child who has cancer, and you determine basically you want your child not to suffer from that chemotherapy or be, you know, killed by that chemotherapy. You're not a free person. You don't even have, your child does not belong to you. Your child belongs to the state. So there's so many ways that show us that we are not free people.
No,
you can't collect rainwater in some states. Well, you're not free to even collect the freaking rainwater that's fallen down from the earth, you know.
And then Angie Mae says, then other slaves come along and rob you of the little you have, and that's right.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true.
There's too many
fences. There's too many no trespassing signs. There's too many, you know, rules, regulations, licenses, you know, various other things that you need in order to basically just survive, if you're surviving at all.
I wonder, at what financial level does your status change from not being a slave to actually being free, I guess? Because a lot of these people that you hear that are millionaires and billionaires, they seem to get by with things that we wouldn't even dream of even doing to begin with. But if we did, we'd be so far under the jail, we'd be speaking Chinese, you know? So I'm trying to figure out, there's a certain point when you're financially up there that you can buy your way out of anything.
Once you step on the wrong side of that elite system, even if you're a millionaire, they will take you down.
Yep.
The elite will take you down.
Yes. The IRS will step in. The courts will step in.
Well, a lot of people get...
Look at Willie Nelson. How dare he talk about pot and smoking pot? What did they do? They tore him to pieces, you know.
Went against the elite's controlling system.
Right, but he was a golden child before that. Had mansions and partied all the time, and everybody was happy. Yeah.
Well,
I'm just saying, but you notice that there are privileged people who do get lighter sentences, who do get... You know, whatever, get away with things, I mean, and so on. And even like Epstein, for instance, got away with that first trial, got a slap on the hand, had all of his privileges and young girls coming in even while he was supposedly in jail, which he wasn't. Well, now it supposedly looks like they got him. Okay, and now what happens? Well, now he supposedly commits suicide, but actually he didn't commit suicide, supposedly. He's been swept away somewhere, hidden. You know, and now all the supposed, you know, elites who are, you know, the bad players are now all scared. Meanwhile, those that are supposed to be scared are buying mansions in, you know, the Bermuda. The Obamas are moving to Bermuda, buying this, you know, compound, and Hillary and Bill are vacationing on Martha's Vineyard, having a grand old time, and who knows who else out there, you know, the queen's still queening, and
saying
Prince Edward is still whatever, you know, running around doing his thing, saying, "No, no, I never did that. That's no, I deny that." You know, I'm just saying
business as usual.
I think they pick who they want to take down. You know, there's a circle.
Step on the wrong side of the line, and you become a target. What was her name? She was the, she was a chef. What was her name? She got caught for trading.
Martha Stewart.
There you go.
Martha Stewart. Think of that. But that was a couple of things. Well, she's an uppity female, first of all.
Yeah, but she made somebody mad. They totally took her down, and now that she's come back, she is really quiet. She's really, you know, you don't hear nothing out of her anymore.
But I think there's an inner circle. There's a tight inner circle. Then there's a little outer circle, and then there's another little circle. That's the elite, the elite formation there. You know, you step on the ones in the inner circle, they're going to take you down. You could be part of the elite, but you're not the elite. You know, then there's the haves and the have-nots and so on and so forth. So I think that's all a system, too, that these people have to toe the line. Even though they're elites, they're not in that inner circle.
So all that censorship that's been going on is basically to ensure that people like us can't reach enough people to gain any kind of power, because money's not the only thing that's power. If you get an idea out there, you can't kill an idea once it's in somebody's brain. If they like that idea is going to live. They're going to tell other people about it. And so with us saying things or pointing out indiscrepancies in governments and stuff like that, that makes us more dangerous than somebody who has $1 billion. Am I wrong?
No. You're not wrong, and go ahead, sis.
Well, I was just going to say that I'm looking at Ann Jamees now. He said former presidents stay on the payroll. They get paid something like $1 million a year for life. They get Secret Service for life.
But they also can't tell the truth. They also can't tell the truth. They have to keep certain things under their hat, and that's a reward for telling the truth. Because I guarantee you, if one of those presidents come out and said something, you know, like the moon landing, you know, the conspiracy about the moon landing, it was completely fake. You know, they're going to take him down right out of the gate. He ain't getting all those perks anymore.
Well, they got perks because they sold their soul.
Yep.
Well, look at all the uppity people that were going to testify against Hillary who are no longer there.
Yep.
You know? If they don't want you there, you don't exist anymore. That's how powerful it is. But the thing that you were saying earlier, knowledge is the most powerful thing that we have in the world.
Yep.
Knowledge is what is the most coveted commodity that there is. That is what the elite and the control have worked so hard and so long to keep under wraps. The knowledge is what empowers people. It gives them a basis on which to see the world clearly. And that's what this internet has done. It has allowed the people themselves to experience a world of knowledge and to go from there to construct their own way of doing things.
I think that's why we're
such a threat right now, is because we've opened up that door of knowledge.
And I think when you have that, you become a unit. People come together.
Yep.
The people, they're afraid. I think the biggest fear they have is that knowledge, but also that we will stand together as a people.
That's it. Because, you know, let's say there's 7 billion people on this planet. That's a lot of people. Alright, and if all them 7 billion people, you know, you take out a small fraction of them, which are the upper echelon, alright, the elitist or whatever, you take all the rest of those 7 billion people by themselves, they're poor as dirt. But together, they are billionaires. You see what I'm saying? Because if I got a dollar in my pocket and 6 billion people have a dollar in their pocket, and we focus our energies into building a structure, we got $6 billion to start with.
Well, if we come together with the same focus and goal in mind for the good of the whole, of all people, that's what they fear the most.
Yep.
With the knowledge and the wisdom that we are, you know, uncovering and speaking about, they fear that.
So the money, you know, the money's insignificant. Even if we all have $6 billion, what makes
like I said earlier, they're talking about the riches and the wealth, and I said, as a psychopath, the majority of psychopaths are the millionaires, right?
Yep.
I have riches in my world, in my life, so that they will never have. They just will never get there.
Well, that's what that's what I was thinking. That, you know, with the knowledge that we've acquired, all of our different researches combined, our thoughts and ideas, that is the most powerful portion of that entity. And if ever come a time when people decided, you know, look, we're tired of paying electric bills, and they all wanted to come together, we could put a team together in a short period of time, be able to put working machines out there that would show all the rest of them, look, this is possible. This is really, truly possible. Regardless of what the system told you, it is possible. And so, we could get things done. It's just...
Well, just the mere fact that we are talking, that we are on these shows that we have been on for years, sharing the things and the researches that we've done, the rabbit holes we've gone down, disclosing and you know, uncovering various things. Okay, that alone is powerful. You know, we are doing something that's very powerful already.
Yep.
just by talking and sharing and, you know, having dialogue here and people in the chat participating and being present, we are doing something already. You know, it's not something later that we're going to do. We are doing it. That's how I feel.
I agree. You know, I know this kind of sounds unrelated, but I started picking up old apples and peaches and pears and stuff like that, and I just grabbed the whole one off the ground, even if they were, you know, already starting to become rotten or whatever, and I took them out on my property and I just threw them out there and forgot them. I got peach trees popping up everywhere now. You know?
That's great.
So what we're doing right now is basically the equivalence of that. We're putting these good signals out there to our other brothers and sisters around the world who feel the same way and would love to see the same things come about, just don't believe it's possible. But as long as we keep on immortalizing these words of wisdom into these podcasts and forever putting them out there in digital cyberspace, people are going to start running into them.
Well, you're planting peach seeds and apple seeds, and we're planting wisdom seeds.
Yep, there you go. That's the way I look at it.
We're seed planters. That's what we are.
That's why I love this. I love this show. I love this thing that we do together, because it inspires me, and it blows my doors off every single time we get together and we start talking about things, regardless of how, you know, harsh or ridiculous the subject may sound. It just takes on a life of its own. And I really honestly feel we get to the bottom of a lot of issues, and it's a learning experience, not just for the people listening in, but for us as well. Yeah.
Well, I feel that the things that I have discovered, you know, the truth of things, the reality of things, compared to what I did not know and what I once believed in, or what I once was captured in that belief that the system put in place. You know, when I find something that is factual and truth, I want to share it, because it just blows my mind. And not that I want to blow people's minds, but I feel this is awesome. This is so important. This is so significant. We've been lied to. We've been duped. We've been controlled. Still, all of that remains. And here's some information that will point that fact out and tell you something else that is really factual and true, I want to share that.
Yep.
I get excited about it because it's like, oh my gosh, look at this. Look at how this has been going on, and all of us were just sitting there duped. You know, our parents, our grandparents, everybody's people just believing in certain things that we were lied to about. And when you find out, when you open that doorway where that light is and you look at this, the facts and the truth, I want to share it. I just can't help it.
Well, the fact we're like moths chewing on the threads that's holding up the curtain that the wizard's hiding behind.
Well, and also, you know, we got god darn hippies in chat. And he says, rabbit holes are like sinks. The water only flows one way down them, and they are designed to take you there. It's all diversion tactics. Well, some people are not afraid to go down those rabbit holes in the dark. They're not afraid of the dark. And the people who do make their way down those holes, they come up with treasures, treasures of knowledge.
Yep.
And that knowledge is there for us to find, for those who want to look. Not everybody does, and I understand that. I truly do.
Now we lost you there, Patty. What happened? Barb, you still there? I don't know what the heck's going on. Did I lose you, ladies? Huh. Uh-oh. Skype's acting monkey again. Let me see if I can call him back real quick. Are you there? Wow. Okay, that's weird. Let me see if I can get these ladies back. I do not know what just happened.
We want to share that information. So, I understand that you feel that way. And it's okay. But for the rest of us, those of us who want to go down those rabbit holes, who aren't afraid to say, hey, there's something different that's not being shown. There's something different that's not being said, and maybe it's important for us to understand and understand the world in which we live. That's why we do that. And
we do it. Yep.
Yeah. And that's why you will always have those people willing to go down the sink, you know.
Well,
and the water may flow one way, but sooner or later,
we got our canoes down there.
Yeah, there you go.
What I feel is the rabbit hole to me actually uncovers the diversion tactics that we've been under. Okay, that's what I feel. I don't feel, you know, I mean, you have to have a certain way. Okay, you just don't go down one rabbit hole. It's not that way. When you go down a rabbit hole, there are a myriad of other tunnels of rabbit holes. There are a myriad of links, like tentacles, to the information. It goes on and on and on. So you have to be able to put things together and look at it clearly and uncover the truth from lies. You have to identify those diversion tactics. You have to be able to discern what is factual, and you do that through the research of many of those tunnels, many of the rabbit holes. Right, sis? I mean, we've been sometimes on days looking at things, you know, and putting things together, pulling information apart, putting it back together again. Yeah, it's pretty extraordinary.
And they don't drain me, god darn hippies. They empower me.
Absolutely.
They give me a insight. Had I not gone down a rabbit hole, I might not have ever come to the realization that the Bible is just a book of stories made up of stories that were made before that, that came from original stories. I would not have found out that the governments that rule us are all based in the same cabal I would not have found out that the food that we eat, the medicine that we have, all of these things, that they were an agenda and they were part of an incremental slip into our system to create the illness and the disconnect that we have with each other. I would have never found out possibly that religion is a divider instead of promoting unity. I would never have found out if Shaziz wouldn't have went down that rabbit hole, if Tesla wouldn't have went down that rabbit hole, we might never have realized that there was something, an alternative to petrochemicals. Things like this. I guess a preference. Do you want to know, or do you want to just accept? You know,
I do want to say that I can see what Gopis is referring to here. They are meant to drain you, and I can see that he's right, because it takes tenacity, it takes a lot of determination, commitment to go down these rabbit holes.
Well,
because
that's what I was getting ready to say. It takes a special kind of person to even be able to survive going down a rabbit hole, because most people, it'd drive you insane, you know?
Well, there are things that I have found out I have to come up for air, because it's pretty daunting.
Yeah.
I have stepped away. Yeah. I have actually said, okay, I need a break. I have stepped away because this is intense. Now, if you don't have the skin to meet the intensities, the daunting, you know, task, no, you're going to just run away and you're going to just forget it. You're going to step away and you're going to say, okay, I can't do this, or I'm not going to do this, or this is too crazy. You have to have that tenacity and that courage even to meet what it is down there. And I guess that's, Patty, what we have. I guess that you, me, Patty, some other people, I guess that's what it is. But I can understand what you mean. They are meant to drain you. They're very confusing, very complex, and it's not an easy thing.
Well, folks,
it's exhausting sometimes. It's daunting.
It's that time.
Maybe you got to be a psychopath.
Yeah.
Maybe you have to be. Well, you have to be totally determined to seek the truth. If you want the truth, you have to be able, you will be able. If you want the truth, if you truly say, I want to find out the truth, then you will begin your journeys, and nothing will prevent you from, you know, the solutions that you come up. Nothing will get in my way.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's
like
not... Yeah, it's not good enough for me to look at the world and say, this is just how it is. Because within myself, I know there's better ways, there's different ways. So I want to know why.
Yeah.
Why? Why are we here at this point?
I guess I'd say Creator put us on this path. I mean, I think I've come to that conclusion about myself. I can't speak for anybody else, but finding out the way it all worked, that I am here in this moment speaking to you, I can truly say all the signs, all the directions, all the turns, all the in the pathway, and all what happened put me here in this moment in time to do this. And part of that is the research to find the truth and to share the truth.
Well, I believe it's all here. I believe it's all. We're all here for a reason. And as much as I hate it, it's that time again to go around the table, because we got to start wrapping this thing up. But, man, that's been a really good conversation. I think maybe we ought to do a part two to this one, because I think it was really, really enlightening, you know. But
works for me.
So
always.
Maybe if you ladies want, and I'll do the same, we'll look up some more stuff kind of related to this same subject, because I think if you don't know the game that's actually being played, you know, like the game of chess, I tell people all the time, I said, if you want to learn how life really functions, go out there and learn how to play a game of chess. There's things that are going on that chessboard that you're actually witnessing on a regular basis, such as the simple example of being a pawn. If you're a pawn, you're the one that gets pushed out there on the battlefield. You're the one that you're expendable. And because it's all to save the queen or the king, you know, to not get in check or whatever. It's to win the game. And these folks, they know how to play chess. They know how to manipulate your heart. They know how to use whatever things that they can to get you to act in a certain manner. That's all these protests out there. They know you're going to do this. They set you up to do this. They want you to do this because they make more money when you do this. When you do what it is that they basically guided you to do, they win. And that's why we got to be smarter than that. We got to learn how to play the game. And this game about the psychopaths in charge, we know there's psychopaths in charge because their actions speak louder than words. I mean, they don't care who they step on to do what it is that they do to us. But we are tired of it, you know. We choose to support these people. We keep on re-electing some of these same psychopaths just for the simple fact is some of them are a lesser evil in our eyes. They're lesser two evils. Well, evil's evil, no matter if it's lesser or more. And the right wing and the left wing are connected to the same exact bird, and that same exact bird will not hesitate to eat you alive if you get out of line. And the true power that we keep talking about is that all you people out there by yourself, you might be only, you know, $1. That's it. That's all you got. But together combined, you are billionaires. All of you together combined are billionaires. And I'm just using the money thing for an example, but your true fortune is what Barbara talks about all the time, what Patty talks about, and what I talk about is that all of these, we are so incredibly blessed to be able to sit here and talk with each other and all these other wonderful people from around the world and interacting with each other. We are so incredibly blessed, and it makes us as a family because we're always watching out for each other. It's a humbling experience. You know, it's an awesome experience. I get overwhelmed a lot whenever I do these shows because the words of wisdom that come out, you know, and it's like watching your true family, you know, interact with each other. And I think, honestly, this family's growing. I think, honestly, it can even grow even further. But even if it doesn't, this little tiny group right here is so amazing. The things that we have seen, that the places that we've gone, the rabbit holes we've gone down, the wisdom that we've acquired, and being able to put these out here for people to, be able to make decisions for themselves. And it's just incredible. It's just an awesome thing. I think I am so happy that we do these shows. And it's probably the highlight of my life. You know, I've seen a lot of things in my life, but this right here tells me that there is hope in this world, and that if we can get this mindset, plant this seed, and that tree grows, the fruit that's going to come out of that is going to affect our future generations profoundly, to the extent that they'll look back one day and they'll say, wow. Now, I want them to say, wow. I want them to be able to walk through life without having to worry about whether they're going to be able to eat or whether they're going to be able to get some fresh water or not, or the medicines that they need to take care of themselves. And these are just words to some people, but this is power. This is true power of the people is what we're sharing with the world. And that comes from that big old heart that we talk about all the time. Anyway, which one of you ladies want to go first?
Go ahead, sis.
Well, first off, I want to say hi from Barry Prince, because he has been, he woke up late, he didn't get his coffee in time, so he didn't get to join us, but he was in the bush yesterday, and so he got back late. He wants to say hi to everybody, and so I want to say that. But, you know, here's the thing, is that Creator made me with a questioning mind, and I've never disappointed myself with failing to ask questions, and because of that I have a better understanding and a better inner standing of the world in which I live and in the way I interact with it. So I am blessed in that respect. This is a wondrous adventure. This is the adventure of a lifetime. And I'm going to do everything I can that is within me to make sure that I put myself into it, immerse myself into it, because this life is only momentary. It's going to be gone quickly, you know, in the blink of an eye. And I'm not going to waste my time here. I'm going to experience everything that I can experience. I'm going to try to understand and understand everything that I can possibly gather from this little life of mine. And I hope that the things that I do share will help someone else to question, will help someone else to feel like they have the ability to enjoy this ride. That's what it is. I've often said you can't take it personal because life happens to everyone, and to me that's a fact. This is our life. This is the world in which we live, and it doesn't matter what side of the coin you're on. It doesn't matter what your base beliefs are. This world exists in this time, in this reality, so you've got to make the most of it, whatever that is for you. Follow your bliss, stay in your bliss, and enjoy this ride. You're not going to come back here again, so you might as well make the most of it. And I love each and every one of you, and I thank you for listening.
Agreed.
Have a good one.
Agreed, and stay true to yourself. That's the biggest deal. You are important. Barbara, how about you?
Yeah, thank you, sis. Beautiful. Oh, I'm just thinking about this time we have here, as you say, and what are we doing and how are we participating? What are the choices that we're making? And, you know, like you say, it's like a blink of an eye, a moment in time here. And I feel everyone here present on this earth now is meant to be here. There's not one mistake of your being here. Some people might say, well, I didn't choose this, you know, I didn't sign up for this, but, you know, I think on a grander scale, something far greater than we may realize is functioning here. I truly believe that, and I have this great hope and faith inside of me, and I don't feel hopeless ever, which is a good thing, you know. I think if I felt hopeless and that this was like we're doomed kind of stuff, I wouldn't be talking to you. I wouldn't be even bothering to do any, you know, rabbit holing or research or sharing. And so I don't have that. I do have a great faith. I feel something is far greater happening here, but we must participate in a way that, of course, you're going to choose how you want to participate. I do believe in the adage, what goes round comes round, and what we focus on and believe we bring to ourselves. We create our own reality. We draw to us what our mind focuses on or what we believe, how we speak. And when we speak, the universe listens, you know. And so how are we speaking? How are we participating? What is our frequency every day, you know? What is the energy that we are emanating? Because I, you know, I've always got to look at that. We are the center here. We are powerful with our frequencies, our thoughts, our energies, our words. We can change. We can manifest change. We can create change according to what we believe in and our frequencies, our energies. And of course, the most powerful energy and frequency I feel is that from our heart spirit, that love and that compassion and the gratitude. It's such a key piece. And I know people are struggling, and I know it's not easy to hold that, but I do believe in that is an answer, that is a solution. It is something given to us, this power, as seed planters, to bring change. It may not be in the moment that we want to see it. It may be later. It may come after we're gone. I don't know. But as a seed planter, I guess I'm saying that We have the opportunity and the chance to plant a seed. What do you want that seed to be? What is it that you want to manifest and bring for yourself, but also the coming generations, you know, the ones coming behind you, behind us? I think this is because what we speak about, every act is a function energetically into infinity. It is ever present. I do believe that. So I think we are living in an awesome, awesome, extraordinary moment in time. And yes, we are in some form of a battle, personal as well as collective, energetic battle, dark light, spiritual battle. And I just somehow believe that the light is more powerful, that love is more powerful, that kindness is so much more powerful. And that's where I think we are today. We are in a really awesome place. To me, powerful, exciting time. And I'm happy to be here with all you guys and have this opportunity to be, you know, to be with the people for people here, my sister and my brother, Hilamaya Doksha.
I agree. I believe, I love it in the light. I love love, and I believe that our Creator didn't create any trash, only treasure. So all I'm saying, run out there and smile on somebody. Do like Barry says, go out and smile at somebody every single day. Anyway, folks, you've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. If you find anything worthy of this show or it gives you some sort of help or whatever, take this and share this message with somebody you think needs it. And there's plenty more where that came from because we'll be back. We love doing this. We love spending our time with you. So share the podcast with somebody. Share some positive message with everybody. Peace and love, everybody. Take care.
What is the dream? The dream is to bring brilliant minds from every nation together to solve the world's problems, one positive pebble at a time. It will be we, the people of the world, that bring about true change, peace, and love to all. Governments never solve any problem, only create them. Wars, starvation, sickness, oppression, financial slavery, death and destruction is what governments do best. When all the military might of nations is used to destroy other nations, the question has to be asked, why not use that military strength for good? Feed the hungry, shelter the homeless, heal the sick, and so forth. True representation of truth, freedom, and justice comes from we the people, and it never came from slick-talking politicians that say whatever they have to get elected, and then regulate away your freedoms. There is no reason to have starving babies in the world of today. Yet, it goes on. There's no reason for wars and sickness, yet it continues. We as the people must stop feeding that beast that is eating humanity alive. We the people of all nations have the power to bring about a literal heaven on earth. You as an individual have more power than you can possibly imagine. You have the power of the spoken word. You have the power of the pen. The power of action, and most of all, the power of love. It is time to use this power to make our world a better place. We are the founding fathers, mothers, sisters, and brothers of our children, and of our children's children's future. Into the future and beyond, what we do today will define the world that they live in tomorrow. Let us, from every nation, come together and make that future a great one.
It was that ant that stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh,
one ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss, they're puny.
Hmm, puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Didn't that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back!
Does anybody else want to stay?
Old woman!
Man!
Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would
realize... Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
We're knights of the round table, we dance whenever we're able. We do routines, we call the scenes, we put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-able. So many times we've given rhymes that are quite unsingable. We're off so mad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
On second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Ho, ho, ho! King Shaziz the Terrible! King Shaziz the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table!